Bill, we can start. Yep.
Yep.
You don't have to call on me.
Well, we will.
We get to ignore you.
On all
that's
anyone
mean,
in
yeah.
there.
That's right. That's
all right.
Deal. I've been waiting a long time.
All right. With that, I'd like to call the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council Executive Committee meeting to order. And just to refresh your memory, the members of the Executive Committee are myself, Jim Cox, who's the Vice Chair, Darby Nelson, who is the Secretary of the Council, Dave Hartwell, who is the Treasurer, and Representative Rick Hansen, who is the Legislative Representative. Is that the right title? Yeah. And welcome to other members, Wayne, Bill, Bob, thanks. And you know, feel free to participate in this meeting as you see fit.
We don't vote.
You don't vote. That's right. And so the purpose of today's meeting is twofold. We have two agenda items. The first is to forward a recommendation to the council for a process that the council will take the council through to get us to the point where we're making our recommendations to the legislature. Recall that the legislation 97A requires us to develop our fiscal 2011 legislative recommendations to the House and the Senate by January 15th of next year. So we'll spend a substantial portion of our time this afternoon just talking through a document that Bill's put together and making sure we have an understanding and there's some agreement about how we'll move forward. This will be in the form of a recommendation to the full council that will act hopefully on this or some modification of this, whatever we agree to at our next meeting, which is currently proposed for next Tuesday and Wednesday. Which leads me to the second agenda item, and that is we need to get agreement and forward a recommendation to the council for our meeting schedule. And recall that several weeks, probably months back, Bill, I don't know, when was it, March maybe, or?
End of March,
Bill asked for your availability all throughout the summer. And based on that availability, Bill has proposed a series of meetings taking into account the input we received back at our last meeting in May. And so he has a proposed meeting schedule, format, and agendas, general agendas that we're going to hash over and forward, hopefully some version of that to the council when they meet. Again, anticipating that next meeting of the full council is next Tuesday and Wednesday up in either the Fergus Falls or Alexandria area. So, with those two agenda items as the major business that we have to deal with, we also have a time for public comment at the end. And we plan to adjourn at around 4:30. So, with that, I would move or entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as proposed.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there any discussion on the agenda as proposed? Rick.
Mike, I have a question just on the changing of the fiscal year here in relation to the statute that was passed. And maybe this can be just a short discussion as we go through the timeline, but things with Bill and expenditures that occur and getting expenditures done for this fiscal year, which are then reimbursed versus those that happen after July 1st. And just maybe a short discussion on that. I don't know if it needs to be an agenda item or it can be incorporated in somewhere.
I think we should incorporate it. Any changes we need to incorporate as an agenda item. So let's add this as a new number 3, which will be just a kind of recap of budgeting and reimbursement that Bill, you will lead. Any other proposed changes to the agenda? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? We have an agenda. So with that, Bill, and so Rick, help us out in terms of maybe some specificity of what you're looking for, but Bill?
Go ahead. I think, and Bill and I talked about this a little before, but we have in the statute now a reimbursement of the Game and Fish Fund. The Game and Fish Fund paying expenditures that occur in this fiscal year. So I think the books have been done up through maybe the last meeting, and you've got a fiscal year ending on June 30th. And so just a question of how, I mean, let's take, for example, mileage from this meeting, getting that done and processed so that clocks on this fiscal year When is there a start and a stop time and an obligation from members to get things in, and then the DNR doing the administrative question, and then how long does that continue as we cross from June 30th to July 1st?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Bill, I recall, I don't know if it's still this way, but we used to close the books, I think it's like August 1st or 15th, and there's a possible slop over if you, you know, really have a extenuating circumstance. Or
the state works on an accrual basis, so you pay for your expenses out of funds available for the period in which the expense was incurred. Internally in DNR, we have a 30-day so that I want to get the expenses from the last period in, cleared, and off the books within 30 days. So I think what Representative Hansen is driving at is that as we come into the transition between the LCC and the DNR, we've got to make sure that we get all the expenses booked in to the current fiscal year and as many paid as quickly so we can solve that financial problem, pay back that, or know what the loan payback is. You've asked a second part of this question, and that's what happens to staff on July the 1st. And without an arrangement of some sort, and I have not talked to Greg about this, I'm off the council as of the 1st of July. I believe, and I've talked to the deputy, there are provisions to either contract with the department or shift my assignment, one of the two, with a short-term leave of absence until we can get this settled. I do have a commitment that they will provide me a DNR with a leave of absence in the interim. Is that what you needed, Rick?
Rick, and maybe, Bob, at some point I'd ask you as the chair of personnel, because I know you and I have had some conversations with Greg Heminger about the LCC and the transition. But so, Rick, a response or a follow-up, and then, Bob, if you could just add a couple of words to kind of where we are with personnel and the hiring process.
So relating to Bill's employment or any other staff that are working, if they work till June 30th, they work till June 30th, and then that falls into this fiscal year. I'm not sure where that where June 30th falls on a pay period date, but I'm just thinking of the process, the actual processing through of that fiscal year, and just confirming that when you're done, then, or any other staff, that those salary dollars will process through, and then they're charged to the Game and Fish Fund, and then they're reimbursed under the statute.
Right. All people, all staff are coding to Activity Code 9301. So in any given period, I could code 30 hours to the LOHC and 10 hours to something else in DNR. So on that transition date, unless there's an arrangement made otherwise, I'll just start doing other work with no other staff. So an arrangement has to come in place to keep staff rolling after July, after June 30th.
Rick?
Yeah. And Bill, is it unlikely or is it likely that we would exceed the $100,000 in the appropriation for reimbursement?
It is unlikely. As of the meeting the 21st, the accounting I received and put together for that meeting, I believe it was, we had spent a little over $56,000 out of the $100,000.
And just to clarify, Rick, I think I heard you say that, you know, past June 30th, that reimbursement would be, or charges would be made from the Game and Fish Fund, and that ends, that allowance is only good through fiscal 2009. So if I understand it correctly, beginning July 1, the fund will go, the Outdoor Heritage Fund will go in deficit, and we'll have to borrow from the general fund for staffing. Is that correct, Bill?
I don't know. That would be Mr. Hubinger's question.
Or Greg, do you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what it would mean is, yeah, you're right. The money doesn't come in until August 15th start coming in. So
right.
if you're going to pay out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund for staffing and other expenses of the council, that will be borrowed against the general fund or some other fund. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the general. That would be up to the commissioner to find.
Right. So just looking at the bill, it says that up to $100,000 may be transferred to the Fish and Game Fund as reimbursement for advances to the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council made in fiscal year 2009. So I read that as through June 30th of this year.
And that's what I was trying to state. He's, that ability is only for reimbursement.
Yep. Bob, any update?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. What I ask is, how are we working on arrangements to have a continuation of staff past June 30th?
Bob? Yeah, Mr. Chair, I've been in touch with Craig Hubinger on filling the position. There were a couple of outstanding questions that he had to do a little more research on. And if you are comfortable with it, I may just step out for a little bit and see if I can get some answers. And we can come back to this item perhaps later in the meeting time.
Yeah, that would be great. Yep, I think that's a question in everyone's mind.
Mm-hmm. But that's just about hiring. I think it's highly unlikely that we could go through a hiring process, a posting and hiring process by June.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair, David, I think there are a handful of things that are related to it, such as cash flow. So, for example, one of the outstanding questions was, can we get access to cash of some kind starting on a theoretical basis July 1st for whatever expenses there are, notwithstanding the fact that the fund doesn't take its first deposit until August. So can we operate in some fashion in the interim, 45 days?
Is someone working on an arrangement with Bill's boss so that they allow him to continue to participate, assuming Bill would like to, or anyone else who's been helping out in the interim period until we hire our own staff?
Good questions, Bob. We're trying to pull that information in the next
Between now and 4:30?
Between now and 4:30, thank you. Rick, anything else? Or
no.
Okay, great. I want to then move to agenda item number 3, which is really going to consume the bulk of our discussion, and that is developing a strategy for developing our fiscal year 2011 recommendations. And as a backdrop for that, hopefully you've all received a copy of a 10-page document that Bill distributed late last week, titled the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council 2010 Strategic Planning and Recommendation Development Process. And this is for our discussion, just as a straw man, so that we can work through that. And again, the goal would be that at the conclusion of this discussion today, we will have a recommendation that we can forward to the full Outdoor Heritage Council. But before I do, Bill, I guess I would ask you, without even, you're going to walk us through this document, but before you do, maybe you could just give us a few 30,000-foot comments about the process that you envision and kind of the major steps in the process, so that when you go through this page by page or paragraph by paragraph, people can see how it fits within this broader context of what you're proposing we do.
Okay. What I'm about to say is in the context of what I was brought up with, was drilled into me by my father, in terms of how you treat your work. And he would tell me, Bill, just remember this saying, good, better, best, do not let it rest until the good is better and the better is the best. And we had, in our last go-around, first go-around, a good approach for making recommendations. There were some places where improvement was thought to be to our advantage. Public meetings, noticed, open process. Geographic balance was a question, or geographic regions, or geographic regions. Some of these questions came from outside the council, some came from within. In addition, there's been a sort of a change in the groundwork with the advent of the 25-year plan that's in legislation, legislative guidelines. We have the instruction to work on this on the basis of existing plans, and we also have an instruction to have some kind of geographic distribution. So what I've, with that in mind, what I've designed is something that's basically a three-step process. And the first one step is with respect to those statewide plans whether they be comprehensive or species-specific or habitat-specific. And the first step is to go out and collate those objectives from those plans, those long-term goals and issues into each planning region, so we can begin to get an idea on a macro scale what the different entities have defined as the important things to do in each of these areas. The second step relies in a public setting on conservation professionals from all ilk to arrange to validate these goals that have been collated and to arrange them into reasonable five-year goals and create annual targets. 5-year goals are out there because the 25-year plan is to be reassessed at every 5 years. So it's trying to bring our thinking into sync with the 25-year plan. The annual targets are out there to drive requests for funding. The third step, and really extraordinarily important step, is a final review and improvement to these targets and issues for each region in a general public meeting where conservation professionals would be there to answer questions as well as to provide input, and the general public would be there to provide enrichment, further direction, identify anything that was just not workable, and get it corrected. The general public meetings also will help us provide issue emphasis within each of the regions. What do you think ought to be done in this particular region for these, given these issues? Which is the most important? All of this is to develop a call for requests, similar to what we did last time, only with some improvements that are in response to things that we've heard and things that we've said. For example, the call for requests needs to have a standard form to be completed. You don't see that in here. There's just a mention of it. That's to be done on down the line. Also, we want to make sure, we heard a lot of people say, it really would have been to our advantage if we had some ideas to where the priorities were of the council. So we want to make sure that call for request is reflective of the council priorities. So with that, that's a general overview. Do you want to pause for a moment?
Yeah, I think it's helpful because before we dig into this 10-page document, what you described, Bill, was what we heard, I think, not only at the last meeting in May, but from the time we started meeting in December, which is we have a lot of great habitat plans out there, the duck recovery plan, the pheasant plan, shell lake restoration plan. So as you described that first step, which is to take the goals, and remember that's something we talked about as we had a number of presenters back in January presenting to us the plans. We were impressed by the goals, specific targets. For example, you know, in the WMA long-range acquisition plan, their goal was 700,000+ acres added to the wildlife management area system. That's one of, you know, dozens of plans, habitat or wildlife plans that we reviewed. To take a look at those plans, not reinvent the wheel, but to use those long-term goals or targets, quantifiable, acreage, could be miles of shoreland, stream miles, and put those into these habitat regions that that we're going to define. And Bill has proposed 5. And so if we have 5, then take those statewide plans and look at all of the different habitat wildlife plans, disaggregate those into the 5 regions. And then that becomes the basis for going out to the resource management public, being the public managers, the nonprofit partners that we've been working with that we helped fund this first time around, and ask them, number one, are those the right goals? Are those correct? Have things changed since a plan was developed? But number two, and very importantly, That's right. So what are realistic outcomes that we could expect, you know, based on limitations on capital and labor over the next year for funding in fiscal 2011? So within the context of these broad goals, 50-year, 25-year goals, what can we realistically expect to accomplish? And that comes from our resource managers, our area wildlife managers, fisheries managers, local soil and water conservation district, Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, PF, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, all the partners that we've heard from and worked with this past session. And then once we have those two things in place, we would, if I hear you right, Bill, and read this correctly, we would then go out to the public and just really have them validate, are these the right issues? Are these the right targets? And then at the end of that three-step process, the council will then be able to make a more surgically directed call for proposals to then look for projects to fund to address those long-term goals, you know, mindful of what's realistically accomplishable over the next year. So it kind of it really juxtaposes a long-term vision from the plans with what are realistic targets from the resource managers. So maybe before we go any further, any questions about just kind of the three-prong approach? Again, we're just getting to the point where we would have a call for proposal issued by the council, or we're to that point where we want to issue a call. Jim?
I'm just wondering, Mike, is there other groups? I mean, we have all these plans, but there's other things, other entities that are going to affect this work. I mean, we've heard from the agricultural community. We've heard from local units of government. We've heard, you know, who's going to be able to actually do this physical work? Have we talked to these people? I mean, aren't there a lot of other entities that we're going to have to talk to formulate this process, mm-hmm. other than just these plans?
So the answer, I guess I defer to Bill as well, but let me give you my take on it. I'd like to hear other members as well. The answer is yes. I mean, the implementation of the habitat work is going to be done by lots of partners. And we review a lot of plans. Did we review all the relevant plans this last session? Probably not. So we're going to have to figure out where the gaps exist. So if it's the agricultural community, for example, that has, you know, input into this process, we need to seek that input. But
where is that going to enter the process?
So that would enter the process in step three probably, unless they're a resource manager or actually doing work, where we would get input on, are these the right priorities and are these realistic outcomes?
Well, yeah, I could clarify a little bit as to the way I understand it. It is actually in step two where the other groups and entities that do this kind of work come into play. And what's important is to arrange the work to be done, the stuff that we've found from these large statewide plans, into reasonable five-year chunks. And that's something that DU, that DNR, that Bowser, that Trout Unlimited have to weigh in on, because they're doing the work. And then to get that translated into a one-year target, which is going to be reevaluated again because it's a little bit more realistic. So it's a stepwise process of figuring out whether, A, these are the right things to do, and B, whether it's reasonable in terms of quantity to be achieved.
Mr. Chair, to try and put it in more simple terms, I'm looking at this map, and I don't want to jump ahead, Bill, but this may be illustrative, you know, one page. But we will have taken a region, and at the end of our effort, we will have identified a 50-year, 25-year, 5-year, and 1-year target within that region of prairies, wetlands, forests, fish, game, and wildlife habitat available for potentially for protection, restoration, and enhancement. Is that essentially?
In a nutshell, that's essentially it.
Okay. So we talked at some time, in our very first meeting, we talked about an asset allocation model, if you will, of protection, restoration, enhancement of prairies, wetlands, forests, fish, game, wildlife habitat. So we will essentially have a asset allocation target at different time frames, 1, 5, 25, and 50 years, for each of those regions to be modified every 5 years.
And of course, the challenge will be we'll have needs much greater than we'll have available resources, even with the $80, $70, $90 million a year from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And so the challenge will be identifying those priorities within all of those needs.
David?
I just want to focus for a minute and make sure I'm not misunderstanding, but it seems to me we want to establish broad goals for the types of habitat that we want to preserve, protect, enhance, and restore. The last thing we want to do is identify specific parcels or projects for across the state, or we will spend the next 2 years just trying to figure out, you know, which marsh needs to be restored here and what prairie needs to be protected there. We should come up with broad asset allocation guidelines, not specific projects in this process. And I think it's important that we, this is my perspective, but it's important as we go through a public comment process that that's clear too, that we do not want to spend a lot of time focused on I need this particular 40 acres protected as much as we need to ensure that 10% of the grasslands are protected and you know 50,000 miles of shoreline or whatever the guidelines are or we'll never get to developing a strategic plan that has any meaning, I'm afraid.
From my perspective, Dave, I'm with you because, in fact, looking at the top of page 9, we're jumping ahead, but one of the minimum criteria that's now in this round is that if this is a proposed acquisition in fee titles or easement, permanent easement, that we would only consider a proposal, and this is tangential, but I think related to your point, that we're not going to be entertaining individual 40 or 80 acre proposals, but we might be looking at funding capacity, whether it be wildlife management area system, aquatic management area management system, or you know waterfall production areas with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So in other words, we can't get in the business of saying this parcel's in, this parcel's out, because who are we sitting in 300 North of the state office building to make a judgment about someone who's coming to us with an idea? You know, we've got programs in existence that have screening criteria, resource professionals that do the due diligence. I certainly don't want to get in the game of starting to end run that process. So, Dave, that's my expectation, is even from the 50-year down or 25-year down to the annual realistic targets, we're still talking about kind of at a programmatic level.
I'm there. I just think we need to be very careful we don't slip into public comment about specific parcels, or you know, we'll spend our whole life there.
I agree.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would just add that I think David probably agreed. We don't want to be so broad that we have no way to measure our success.
Oh, you've got to measure your success, but we can measure our success in you know so many acres protected, so many acres restored, and assume that we're going to require criteria for individual project selection that's based on a ranking of some sort.
Any other, Rick?
I think there's another 50,000 view of this as well, and that's that there was discussion about having some parallel integration with the legislative committees on development and legislative guide. Mm-hmm. And so which horse is out of the gate first or faster, and how do they run in tandem or parallel? Or competing. I think that's, I'm just asking, have you had any discussion with the chairs of those committees on this and looking at how there's integration?
I haven't had any chairs with any of the legislative, the House or Senate committees. In fact, next Monday, a week from today, I've been asked to meet with the Clean Water Council along the same lines to talk about kind of what our missions are and are there opportunities to collaborate as a council with their Clean Water Council.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think Rick is on, Representative Hansen is on something. I think as the council makes some decisions today, informing and hearing on an individual basis through your work with those chairs, I think it's probably a good step. And that, knowing that, but that guide is not due until when?
That's due in February, I believe, of next year.
Next year. Yeah. So,
well, and on that point, I'd have asked Bill to look for opportunities that we might interact with the LCCMR, because that's one of many groups that we need to. Any other comments, Bill?
Thank you.
Please.
Bill, when you talk about the working document here, you're talking about planning process. Are we going to be looking at page 7 of 10 here as a guideline chart?
Yes, we are.
Okay, if so, the campaign for conservation is something new to me. In reviewing the documents beforehand, can you explain that a little bit better, how that gets plugged in here, and really what does this group know about game, fish, and wildlife, if they do, or am I asking the wrong question here?
You know, that's a good segue. I guess what I'd like to do, Bill, if it's okay with you, is let's have Bill walk through the documents, so by the time we get to page 7, then we can have a discussion along the way, but I think let's have Bill walk through the documents, so as whether it be the campaign for conservation or the habitat regions that Bill's proposing, we can talk about that as we go through. Is that okay with you?
Sure. I just noticed that, and just in general, the document itself lacking the game, fish, and wildlife terms in here that we definitely should be paying attention to. So, yeah, that's fine.
Sure. One note is that we did hear from the campaign for conservation in one of our early meetings as an overview. I don't know if you were here, Senator, or not. And just as a complete side note, but Mr. Hubinger is here, and he's happy to answer any questions at a time that is helpful, but I'm mindful of his time. If you want to sit here for the next 3 hours, you're welcome to do that. But Mr. Chair, that's your agenda.
Yeah. I hate to put you on the spot, Greg, but if you're available, maybe, let's say, at the end of this discussion of this process document, we can stop before we get into our work planning for the coming months of meetings. We can discuss what's the staffing arrangements are and protocols. Great, thank you. Jim, did you have a question?
I just have one other quick question. It seems like we're going to do all our measuring, if you will, on habitats, wetlands, grassland. But you know, this is all for fish, game, and wildlife. Are we ever going to use wildlife populations as one of our accomplishment plans? I mean, if we go through this whole process and our wildlife populations are lower than they are today, I mean, have we succeeded as a council? Isn't that part of what we're trying to do here? Shouldn't that be part of the measurement process is also how are we affecting wildlife?
Well, we certainly can talk about that. I will tell you personally, I would be very cautious about using populations. I'll use an example of like something I have a passion for, which is rough grouse. And if you use population estimates there as a measure of success, you could be creating all of this great habitat, and 5 years from now have absolutely minimal population simply because of the cyclical nature, or as we mentioned earlier, the fact that it snowed 2 inches in Dickinson, North Dakota here a couple days ago, and what effect that has on the pheasant population this spring on top of the terrible winter they've had. So we can talk about it, but to me, a more meaningful outcome is habitat. But certainly we can have that discussion of what those outcomes are.
I might add, I've thought about this over and over again. I think that we need to improve our objectives, but populations of fish and game and wildlife are really affected by external variables quite often. And we may have a wonderful habitat plan, but have a 5-year drought, or habitat plan for waterfowl, and have a 5-year drought that causes tremendous problems.
But these are usually based on, you know, 5 and 10 year averages, Bill. It's not a 1 year snapshot. You take waterfowl, it's breeding, you know, breeding pairs per averaged over 10 years. I mean, that's the way you're always going to have to look at it. Anyway,
I think eventually we want to improve our measures of output to the finest ones we can develop. But I also know that the acres of habitat are a first step.
I agree, and again, my question is there going to be any reference? Is there going to be any measurement? Is there going to be any correlation whatsoever as we move along that we are, in fact, improving populations? Maybe not based on it, but at least be cognizant of the fact that, you know, are we having an effect?
Rick? Well, it appears that people have got their talking points down in terms of habitat and wildlife. I'll just give a contrary opinion. I think people should look at the constitutional language, and then it says protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat. It doesn't say for habitat. And habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. So I think our measurement, when you
only focus on the words fish, game, and wildlife. It does not take into account wetlands, prairies, and forests, and the protection, restoration, or enhancement of those. And no matter how many times you say it, that's still what's in the Constitution. Protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game.
So let's, you know, we're going around this. Let's go through this document, Bill. Could you walk us through this document so we have an understanding? Then we'll move to get some agreement on what changes need to be made to the document to clarify it, to change the direction that we need, so we can get something on the table we can forward to the full council.
Let me just start out with a broad overview. Page one is the background. Page two, you can see an existing plan review and incorporation step. Page three is the planning and recommendation process overview. Page 10, or excuse me, 7, begins the process for developing a framework plan priority goals. Page 8 is a call for requests and forming council recommendations. And then page 9 is the definitions that we intend to use.
Excuse me, I have page 10 on the definitions. Do I have a different version than others? I've got a 10-page document.
I've got a 10-page document, too. I said page 9.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Page 10 is the definitions. The background, basically, we're talking about the objective that we have. This is taken largely out of our 2009 document. The one major addition is the on page one is the Lausanne Sands Outdoor Heritage Council process goal, which indicates that what we're trying to do here is to lay a foundation for the ongoing plan and for uses of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and to make recommendations for fiscal year 2011 appropriations that would be presented to the 2010 legislature. So you see the principles at the bottom. Those are familiar with you, or should be. On page 2, we talk a little bit about the basis in law that we have. The first paragraph talks about the need to achieve the outcomes of existing natural resource plans, including but not limited to the Minnesota State Conservation Plan. This is in statute. Additionally, the statute instructs the council to use the regions of the state based upon the ecological regions and subregions developed by the Department of Natural Resources. In the third paragraph, we talk a little bit about the legislative guide, which states the principles for the use and expected outcomes of all funds from the legacy amendment. And that task has to be completed by January 15th of 2010. And also to complete a 25-year strategic plan by January 15th of 2011. That's a year later. And this plan is linked to a 25-year framework that is in our organizing statutes. In developing the Outdoor Heritage Fund expenditure recommendations, the council will use the plans cited above, and the ones in the list are ones that we enumerate as being used. I might add, this is roughly the list of the major planning efforts that we went through in January.
And I think, excuse me, Bill, just to, I think it was Jim's point, this is not an all-inclusive list. This is a suggestive list. So as we find more plans, we certainly want to bring those, whether it be from the agricultural community or whatever. This is just an enumeration of some of the plans that
absolutely.
We have.
This is to document the base that we established.
Mm-hmm.
As far as at the top of page 3, talks a little bit about the two comprehensive statewide conservation plans, which is the Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan and 50-year vision conservation for Minnesota's future. And they are specifically cited as synthesizing plans in that, as what I understand was done, was they looked at all other plans for species, for other organizations, statewide, things of that sort, and synthesize the objectives and goals of those plans into a comprehensive statewide plan where you could look at the impact of the pheasant plan versus the impact of the duck plan, or alongside the impact of the duck plan. Then there's a discussion of the presentation that we received in January from Ms. Coleman regarding this Minnesota Statewide Conservation Preservation Plan. And these are things that Jean Coleman has offered as her opinion of the things that the Outdoor Heritage Fund could be used for. This may not be what everybody agrees to, maybe a subset of this. But that's part of the reason to have the conservation professionals and the public weigh in on these things. The next discussion is on the 50-year vision, which tries to describe how it goes about gathering these objectives. And there's a lot in the 50-year vision that is what I would characterize as soft. And what by that I mean, it's not a hard target. It's not acres, miles, shoreline, things of that sort. And what we're looking for are the hard objectives and goals that are enumerated in this particular plan. I think one of the reasons that we are dealing with this is that it's one of the few plans that breaks the data down into geographic regions. So that's a step forward that, if we can play off of that, is to our advantage. They use 14 regions, though, so there's some work to be done in recombining this data so that it's meaningful, in a meaningful fashion. And then at the top of page 5, you get an example of three of the kinds of objectives that we're looking for to be collated into a regional set of regions. The next topic on page 5 is planning the recommendation process overview, and this references at first the cross-functional flow chart on page 7, and then begins talking about the regions. And these are certainly up for discussion, but in working with Mike, we determined that there were 5 reasonable regions that could be used to organize the planning. You might ask yourself the question of why not 14, why not another number? A lot of it has to do with simply time, money, and effort available. If we have to go, if we want to go, and I think we do, to public meetings, to organizing data around geographic areas, every time we add a region, we multiply our effort. So the selection of 5 was done based on what seemed to be a reasonable amount of work that could be accomplished.
And just on that point, before we move further, if you look at your map on page 6, at least mine, it really didn't break out. There's a transition region, which is dark, it's the darkest shaded. And there, the intent, at least the version I saw from Bill, had a separate metro habitat region, which, you know, if you were to superimpose, I don't know, Elk River down to Buffalo, maybe. So kind of to make that metro region more circular, and then there's a separate transition zone. They came across on the photocopy as the same color, but there are 5 regions, Bill. And so that one is actually, there are 2 separate regions in that transition zone, a metro region and then an area to the north and west.
Right. I believe if you draw a line from the south end of Crow Mille Lacs County, to looks like McLeod County, that's roughly the division between the northern section there that goes up to the Canadian border and the line that you can see at the bottom of Dakota County. So that would be the metro area, what's delineated there. And I apologize for not doing it in color as it was on the one that I distributed to you. I meant to print a color copy out and never got around to doing this. On page 6, we begin talking about the planning process.
Excuse me, Darby?
Yeah, just a follow-up question. Bill, does that metropolitan area include the collar counties, as folks like to refer to them?
It's essentially that part of the ecological section that's in the dark SHA that is encompasses all of the seven county regions and then parts of the counties to the west and to the north of the seven county region.
Yeah, just like a map that I got on page 6 from the what you sent out is not quite matched with what we've got.
Yeah, I guess here. Put this one away for now. This is, I don't know, this just came, right. Put this one away. We're dealing with this document right here.
Thank you. On the bottom of page 6, we start the planning process, and step 1 is the planning section framework. The maps depicts our planning sections, and step 1 is putting this framework together and getting those actions and issues prioritized and developed under each of those regions. Step 2 is the planning section targets, which is breaking the large data down into 5-year and annual targets. And step 3 is the finalization of the framework targets. You can see in the cross-functional flowchart the assignments and the timeline down the right-hand side as to when this work has to be done and what the work is. This is certainly up for discussion and amendment. On page 8, we begin talking about the call for requests and forming council recommendations. And we intend to publish a call for requests based on the consensus habitat conservation targets developed in step 3. And the public will be made aware of the call via the website, the listserv, and the press. The call will limit requests to those addressing priority actions and targets developed above, and it will carry these screening data. And we'll only consider funding requests that are consistent as specified. Go on down the list. These are largely the criteria that we used last time. In the middle of page 9, there's another set of screening criteria for the requesting organizations, which are familiar to you, and I think have served us well. And then, in addition to the action items and targets from the statewide conservation plans developed in the planning process, we will give priority to requests that call for funding ongoing programs addressing actions and targets of one or more of the planning sections of the state as a whole, produce multiple conservation benefits, produce conservation benefits across a large geographic area, are collaborative, are able to leverage, identify the status of public access in the case of easement acquisitions, address one-time conservation opportunities that will be lost if not immediately funded, urgency that is, are not eligible for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And there's some verbiage missing here. Small grant program. Shouldn't work after 10. Restore and or enhance habitat on existing state-owned wildlife or aquatic management areas. So I believe that the first one and the last two are new additions to what we had the last time around. And these are the criteria that will be used by SOHC members to rank proposals, and it will be a numeric ranking, averaged across all members and available to use as a basis for bringing request managers in to present and stand for questions. What that means is that once we've got the call for the requests in, each member will evaluate those requests independently, will average those, come to a meeting, and determine which ones we want to hear. We may want to hear them all. I do not know. And then finally, at the top of page 10, recommendations will be made by motions by members and may be informed by a mock individual member allocation process averaged across all members responding. And as you recall, we allocated the funds last time, an average of the allocation, and then any one that had money allocated by 7 or more LOHC members was in the package to begin with. The difference here is that
each of those with seven votes would have to be moved by motion. There is a reason for this, and as we went through the process, those that came in the seven or more package got less questioning, and as we went through the legislative process, I didn't feel that we were as well prepared on those as we were on the ones that were brought in individually. So that's the reason for that. This is all changeable. The definitions, we'll use the same restore, protect, and enhance definitions. These are within the legislative definitions. And reflect the priority of the object of the action being to affect fish, game, or wildlife in an ecologically sound manner.
Thank you. Let me just stop right now, and I want to just kind of divert our agenda. Senator Chaudhry is here, graciously here to attend part of the Start Outdoor Heritage Council meeting. Thank you. He's asked that he just make a couple comments to the council. He has an agenda that he needs to leave, and so we still have a public comment period. But Senator, I guess I would, at this point, if you're so still interested, we'd certainly welcome you to the table if you had any comments. And just as a point of context, after that, what I want to do is I want to get a motion on the table to adopt this document so that we can begin our discussion, because we need to develop some changes, I would assume some changes to this document, and then forward a recommendation to the council. But we'll do that afterwards. And then, Greg, if you're still available after we get done with this discussion of the document, we can go back to personnel. Okay? Senator, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. I happened to be in the Capitol today and doing some work, and I knew this was going on as well, so I wanted to come by and say hello. And I don't think I've had a chance to formally do that from this side of the table. So it's nice for you and I to be switched for once.
It's a friendly group.
It's a friendly
group. Yeah, for you.
But I get to call you Mr. Chair for once. So that's nice. And so well wishes on your next year's endeavor. It's my opinion that the Bassar Council has done wonderful work, and I think there has been widespread agreement that the work that this group has done has been conservation-focused. Its recommendations have been balanced and focused on science. And for those of you who may not have seen the Pioneer Press opinion on Friday, the legacy amendment appropriations, and of course a third of that was the work done by this group, were the bright spots in an otherwise very difficult legislative session. So kudos to this entire group for all of your hard work, attention to detail, but also attention to the big picture. And we heard from council the recommendations throughout the legislative process in the Senate, and I think there was a consensus that the work that this council does is excellent and credible. And not only that, you did all of that in an extremely short amount of time. So that made it equally impressive. So now you have more time, and that can be a good or a bad thing. It can be very good because now you can pay more attention to detail. But more time, sometimes you get more distractions, and you can get more opportunity to get bogged down. So I would just encourage the council to keep doing what it has been doing in focusing on conservation in the state of Minnesota. You all have been in charge of the nitty-gritty details of that, and in just a few short months this year, you've been able to piece that all together into a wonderful piece of art for the entire state of Minnesota. And as you put those little mosaics together and then step back, you created a wonderful vision, painted a wonderful swath for conservation in Minnesota, and I think you did. I just encourage you to keep focusing on that big picture, and of course the big picture is what the voters approved in January, and that, Mr. Chair, that was your siren song throughout this process, is that we must always look to the constitutional provision for what we are doing. And through your leadership, I'm sure that will continue. In my opinion, as you're discussing priorities, that has to be the number one consideration in determining your priorities, no matter what plan you're looking at. With regards to the strategic planning, I totally agree with you and many of the members here that there's no sense in reinventing the wheel. But there are many plans that have been put together, and that to synthesize all of those into a 1, 5, 10, 25-year plan as it pertains to the constitutional amendment is the way to go. And I think all of you minds here can certainly do that. The statewide conservation preservation plan, which I was involved with on the LCCMR, is a fantastic document and provides a lot of the answers to many of the questions that that members have. Even with regards to local government and agriculture, there are a lot of those references in there. If their question comes up, it's often answered by that strategic plan. So it may even be worth having that book here as a reference document. You know, what about this? What about that? Well, what did the statewide conservation plans say about this? It probably said something. But of course, that is not to minimize all of the other good plans and visions out there. Your vision provides a big picture swath. The duck recovery plan, even though it's called the duck recovery plan, is a wonderful habitat plan. Cross out duck and insert habitat and reworked it into the vision of what the provision provides, you might even have a wonderful working document there as well. But I think all of these things are excellent. One thing, just a note about the statewide conservation plan, there wasn't a big chapter devoted to outdoor recreation, which gets to the access issue, but it does reference the DNR's outdoor recreation plan, so that can be pulled out as well and developed. And I guess that would bring me to my next point, is that part of the an essential part of the constitutional provision is access to the taking of game and fish. And I know you're going to debate the nuances of that, but that's just, from my point of view, a reminder. I wanted to just read to you quickly, because there's you have a lot of discussions here, and you hear a lot about discussions going on elsewhere in this building and the building across the street. I just wanted to, for those of you who did not have a chance to hear Senator Pogemiller's statement on the last night of session, one of the key points that he made in his entire statement was regarding how to approach this issue of making sure the constitutional amendment is adhered to. And just to read an excerpt, quote, Madam Chair, if the members would indulge me for just a brief second, I was the author of this amendment. It's important that future legislatures closely follow the constitutional requirements of this amendment. The voters expect nothing else. As an example, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the money may be spent only to restore and protect and enhance wetlands, forests, prairies, and habitat for fish and game and wildlife. The key here is habitat. The end result of outdoor heritage dollars should be spending to enhance and restore and protect habitat. The intentions of these expenditures are meant to benefit fish, game, and wildlife. And I've drafted a memo for you all. It includes the entire statement of Senator Pogemiller, as well as statements of Representative Mary Murphy and Senator Cohen in the conference committee as well on the last day of session. And some of those comments are regarding some of the definitions that you'll be wrestling with. And I've given you a memo on the definitions. And they are very clear that it is the intent of the legislature that the terms that the Outdoor Heritage Council use for protect, restore, and enhance are the ones that are expected to be used. Senator Pogemiller himself stated that it is my expectation as author of this amendment that the definitions provided and worked on by the LASART Council itself, which is a subset of the language that is in this conference committee report, is the language that we use in the future expenditures of this 33% of the money. And if staff can pass this memo out, you can peruse it at your leisure. So, my final word is to continue to do the good work that you have done. You really set a high mark for other work in this realm and outside of this realm as well. And I really think that the citizen legislative model works. We've combined the best of both worlds in coming up with strong, science-based, conservation-minded, statewide initiatives that are free from political considerations and focus on what we really need to do for Minnesota's nature. So we'll congratulate you on the work you do. The only thing I would say as far as the legislative process goes is that each and every council member needs to be engaged in the legislative process. Communication is the most important part of that, and it's very easy. Each and every one of you should plan on sitting down with your own senator and member of the House of Representatives and talk about the work that you're doing. And plan during the legislative session, plan on two meetings with your representative and senator each session. That's what my constituents do who are teachers, for example. They come and they have a meeting with me at the beginning of legislative session to talk about what the work they're doing. And about mid towards the end of session, they come and meet again for an update, get my feedback, get my position on issues. And that is your right as citizens to do so anyway. So that's one minor suggestion I would ask you all to consider. Continue to discuss what type of strategy and planning we're going to do over the interim with the legislative committees, we will keep in touch with you in that endeavor. And I just appreciate all the work you've done to date and wish you best of luck on, a difficult road ahead. But a lot of this work was established for you by me. I get to pass the bill and then you guys get to do the hard work, but you're doing well. It is to, in the end, establish a greater outdoors for Minnesota. And there's a freedom involved with that. But the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And so here you are meeting regularly, ever vigilant on these conservation issues, but we'll have to do so even after you pass your recommendations and forward them through the legislative process. Look forward to working with you and all the members in the future. If any of you have any questions, I'm happy to talk with your boss.
Senator, thank you. And I guess on behalf of the council, I want to thank you personally for the support you gave and the confidence in the council. Those of you that weren't able to attend many meetings, we certainly appreciate the leadership you provided in the Senate, along with other senators, in acknowledging our work and supporting the recommendations in the process, to be quite frank, that we went through to get you the first set of recommendations. And the bar is high, you're right, and we hope to continue to have that bar raised, and I think we expect nothing less. Bob.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you again for coming in. Thank you again for your leadership for you. I know Senator Ingram, of course, is here, but Senator Anderson, Senator Saxon, and others, Senator Pogemiller and Cohen as well, so thank you all for that. And just to be clear, this memo that you put together is terrific. Thank you for that. And just so that we're clear in our understanding, that the statements on the floor at the time the bill was up for its final vote or an opportunity for senators or in the House to object to statements perhaps that Senator Fogar Miller may have made. I'm not aware that any objection was made about how to treat these definitions or how to interpret them. And if I recall, in the Senate, the bill passed unanimously. And so if, God forbid, this were ever to find its way to court, these statements would be entered into, presumably, into the record for the court to consider and probably place a high value on in its interpretation of how those terms were to be used. You're a lawyer, Senator, as well as a conservationist. Mike, for the most part, correct?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schroeder are correct, and I would also add that the same is true for the conference committee discussion on this as well. There was, with the statements of Senator Murphy and Cohen, there were no objections to those either.
Thank you, Senator.
Any other comments? Rick? Senator, who is the House author of the constitutional amendment? Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, you know as well as I do, is Representative Sertich.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, Representative Sertich didn't make any, wasn't Representative Murphy, it was Representative Sertich, and Representative Murphy wasn't on the conference committee for the constitutional amendment. You and I were, and others were, but it was Representative Sertich who was the House Chief Office. Is that correct?
Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, might be confusion on what I'm referring to when I talked to Representative Murphy's statements. It was in this latest conference committee regarding the appropriations of this amendment dollars with regards to the new definitions and statute that were inserted in this conference report. So Representative Sertich was not on the conference committee nor involved in the discussions of those definitions. So Representative Murphy's and Senator Cohen's statements, I think, are probably more apropos with regards to these definitions.
Mr. Chair, but and to follow up on Bob's comment, though, in terms of court action or legislative intent on the constitutional language, I'm not talking about the definitions here, I'm talking about the constitutional language. There is a legislative history that occurred with a different legislature on that. In terms of intent and in terms of definitions of what the constitutional language is. And that is not what occurred at the on May 18th. That occurred a year earlier in the session, prior to the last election. Is that correct?
Senator Sean?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, no. There was no discussion in an earlier session about the definitions of restore, protect, and enhance. It was only in this legislative session that that occurred, and that is the, what that is the legislative intent that I'm referring to.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't asking that, Senator Chaudhry. I was asking about the language that's in the Constitution in general, the whole language of the constitutional question. That was debated in a prior legislative session where the people who made comment on legislative intent at that time were the people in the conference committee, and any legislative debate which occurred, which was very minimal at that time. So that was not on definitions. That was just the whole debate on the constitutional question occurred before this was sent, when it was sent to the voters.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'll be happy to dig up some of my comments about the legislative intent and the use of the actual constitutional provision. I'm confident that they support the emphasis on habitat.
And we're not going to resolve that one here. But any other questions for Senator Chaudhry? Because I do know you have another meeting we need to go to. Again, thank you.
Thank you
for your time and your support. Very good. Members of the Executive Committee, I'd like to entertain a motion into, at least for the purposes of getting something on the table to discuss and possibly modify, entertain a motion to adopt the Lessard-Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council 2010 Strategic Planning and Recommendation Development Process document.
I'll move to get it on.
We have a motion on the table. Great. Okay, so now we have this document. And I guess, Bill, I haven't forgot about your question. And I guess I want to be mindful. We can do this a number of ways, but I guess I want to stress a couple things. One is, let's try to the extent we can separate the actions that are called for in the plan, you know, compiling data from different plans or soliciting input from the doers of that, who's involved. So the extent to which we can focus on the substance of what's being proposed and get agreement on that and then figure out, well, who's best suited to do that. So if it's, you know, the resource managers developing the targets and we have some disagreement, we can talk about that, but I want to make sure we are in agreement on kind of the steps that need to be taken to get us to the point where we're going to have a call for proposals. So with that, I guess I would open it for discussion. And again, we have a document before, so if we're going to make any changes, and our goal is to get something to the council for its decision next week, presumably next week, we're going to need to make some changes. But let's see if we can't get some agreement as an executive committee. But Bill, you had a question you wanted to revisit now?
I guess I don't remember that proposal being brought to us, the campaign for conservation. I mean, there was just all kinds of things, so I don't disagree with the fact that it was here. I'm just wondering, is that going to be in our process? And what exactly does that group, I have looked at it online, it is a very good group, I think, and I don't think anybody's going to dispute with what they have set out to do. However, are we still focusing on, again, what the Constitution has said, that we should be looking at enhancing for game, fish, and wildlife? And I don't see that in that particular group. I can see lots of good work there, lots of good outcomes in years to come, I guess, but just an explanation as to why that would be in our plan, I guess.
Let me take a shot at responding to you, Senator. We were presented with an offer, number one, to help, and I appreciate that. But that offer had some particularly attractive aspects to it. Number one, the Campaign for Conservation, which is the author of the 50-year vision, professed to have done a comprehensive look at these plans. We have to validate that, but they professed that that's what they had done. And that gave us a real leg up, because someone had already gone through the plans and extracted these objective goals. It's also a leg up that they're familiar with the data and how it's sliced and diced and how it can be sliced and diced. We have opportunities to do this differently. We can hire a consultant. I this morning talked with the Department of Administration's Management Analyst Division, Management Analysis Division. They have capacity that we can tap into if we so choose. But that's the reason why. We had an offer on the table. It was an earnest offer. They had the information. I had looked at the plan. It has a lot of soft stuff in it, but it has some good hard detail that we're interested in, and that needs to be brought out somehow. I'm reminded of a former Commissioner Sando, who, in talking about reorganization of the department, introduced the term equifinality. There are a lot of different ways to get to the same end. And I think that without being too far wrong, I can say that whether we go with the Campaign for Conservation and use their familiarity with the data and the plans and things of that sort, or go with the Management Analysis Division, either way, we end up in the same place. And that's with a good comprehensive list of hard objectives by planning section. So that's why they're here.
Jim?
Bill, I just have a question. Almost all these plans were developed by the Department of Natural Resources, the majority of them were. I find it very hard to believe that they haven't done this correlating process themselves, either through the Working Plans Initiative or some other endeavor, that they put all these plans together and that never really boiled down all the pertinent data into one document. And if they haven't, I think it would be appropriate to give Mr. Shad a call and ask him why not. I think, echoing Bill's, I would be concerned about letting a private organization boil this information down. I think it would just be a much better process for the for the council if it was done by a public group. And I just want to have another question. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but these acres that are in the pheasant plan, these acres that are in the duck plan, I mean, they're duplicate acres. I mean, we don't need both individual settings. And who makes that determination?
I think we've got staff here to address that at the proper time in this particular
process. But isn't that, that's going to be part of it? I mean,
yes, that is part of the
Then you're going to let, we're going to let a private group make those decisions?
I think you raise a good point.
So, Jim, just another executive committee members, we've got a document before us. If you'd like to make a change, we can certainly propose an amendment at some point, you can, to change the document to address your concern. Darby?
I was just going to say that, you know, I'm looking at a summary of the 50-year vision, and I'm looking back here at the number of sources and the origins, and you're right, Jim, there are quite a few Department of Natural Resource entries here. But there are an awful lot of others as well. It is not purely a DNR document.
excuse me, Derek. I'm talking about the ones we've used.
Well, I think, excuse me.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you look through this list, you see that a lot of the things that we listen to when folks are presenting all these various plans are incorporated into this. These folks did a much more complete job in pulling all of this data together, and there's no way that we need to accept the details of what they say, but I think they're positioned to provide us with, as Bill said, a lot of really useful information that that will enable our work to be more effective and more science-based than we might have just sort of sitting around without that source. Right?
David? I just want to say two things. The first is that I don't care what plans or combination of plans we use. I see it as a rough draft, whatever we start with, which we then ask for the professionals and the public to comment on and say, yeah, but you missed this, and or this is overstated. I don't think, having looked at many of these plans myself, the issue of duplication and gaps is going to get resolved by anybody anytime soon. There is going to be issues no matter how you slice this, because everybody who developed a plan did it in a different way. But I think ultimately what we really want is something that gets us to a question of scale. What's the scale of protection we want to do in a zone? What's the scale of restoration that we want to do in a zone? And that's not about exact numbers. That's about sort of a target that we're shooting for. I don't think it's terribly complex. I think we could, if we want to get to the level that I don't think we want to get to, which is projects, we'll have a debate here forever. If we want to get to the scale of the programs we want to be participating in, you know, whether or not there are 125 or 135 shallow lake complexes that we want to work on really doesn't matter. We know we don't have enough money to do every one of those in the 25 years that we want to do anyhow. But to say we want to get half in this zone by the time we're done puts us in a position of understanding the scale of the types of work we want to do. And if we can just get to something that provides us that guidance as to what we're headed for, I think that's worthy of then saying let's go for it. And so I don't want to get too caught up in the detail of which plan does what. I want to get to the big picture of that. And I think it doesn't matter whose work you look at or whose combination. We're going to start someplace. We're going to ask for some input to figure out where people take deep objection to it. And then we're going to move forward.
Rick?
A process question, so if there's another question at this point.
No, I think now's the time.
So I'm wondering just how we notice this meeting, because it says executive committee, and I count 9 members here out of the 12-member council. And so, and we're having debate amongst, it appears, most of the members. So I'm wondering about posting, and I'm wondering about open meeting questions and how we continue with the dialogue with as an executive committee, because it appears we're acting as a de facto committee of the whole here. And I'd just like some guidance on that.
The decision making at this meeting is the executive committee's decision making authority, and it's exercised only by the executive committee members at the table. And the fact that it's an open meeting seems to cut both ways.
Bill?
Mr. Chair, to that point, aren't we a recommendation to the full body? That's right. What we are.
Yeah, the purpose
we're not
of this
final decision
no,
here.
We're just making advising the full council right. on a process. So
the decision that they're making is what to recommend.
That's right.
Yeah. Wayne, did you have? So just Rick, to your point, any voting is done by the executive committee only. But I encourage any council member to speak freely because we need as much input. We're just making formalizing a recommendation to the full council. And so I'm very comfortable with getting input from council members to the extent they're willing to share it. But when it comes time to decision-making, that's the 5 members of the executive committee that are here. Bill?
Are we still... I'm sorry, Rick. I should have said I wasn't done with the question yet. But with regards to the Camping for Conservation Group, is this... Are we still discussing that as to why it's in here? Or are we going to put it in here? Or what are we at with that? I have some questions, I guess.
Well, why don't you ask the questions
now?
Well,
the question is, what is this group? Has this group at all dealt with expertise in terms of increasing, improving of fish, game, and wildlife? Or is it just habitat in general? And I know they run hand in hand. Don't, you know, I mean, it sounds awful foolish asking some of these questions, but were any of those targeted by this group? And Is it the ultimate resolve of a good plan that they have?
Dave, why don't you then let me have some comments.
Since I was the chair of the Campaign for Conservation, let me do the best I can. When we decided this was something we wanted to take on, we went out to every conservation group we could find and said, what's your vision? That included the hunting and fishing groups, as well as the groups that were interested in recreation. So we didn't exclude anything. We were looking for what are all the plans out there to come up with an overall vision for what conservation might look like. And then we actually went out into the communities and asked groups of people, so what's missing and what should be here that's not, what should be stricken, and use that to help us come up with the ultimate recommendation. So it was not targeted to any one particular group, but it was a very open process. If you look at what we ended up with, most of the plans that are in here were from groups that were interested in habitat and hunting and fishing. That's where the majority of the work came through. There's a bit of work on parks, but it's a fairly minor part of the overall recommendations that were in the report. The WMA's duck plan and pheasant plan, they're the biggest component of this, without any doubt, because they had the broadest vision over the largest area out there.
So to that point, you did have hunting, fishing, and those folks at the table then. You opened it up, they came to the table, they gave input and whatnot for your plan.
Absolutely.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Bill, in your draft that you put together here, your proposal is for this executive committee to consider recommending extracting from that plan only those components that are specifically with habitat, fish, game, and wildlife. Am I correct?
Yes.
So in other words, just to kind of build on that, Bob, again, not an all-inclusive list, but the bulleted items on the bottom of page 2,
right.
Basically to have that task of just pulling out those long-term goals, for example, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wetland plan, along with all the others related to wetlands, and put them together by the 5 or 6, whatever habitat regions we are going to be using. So that will be those will be our long-term 25-year target. So it just gets back to this question of, we want to separate out two things. Do we want that to occur? And if we can agree that we want those goals to occur, secondly, who should position to do that? Bob?
Yeah, and then just to follow up to that, Bill, you said you talked to management analysis. Obviously, there are many other groups that could do it, but that's the one that you talked to, and I am familiar with them. Did they give you any sense, in the absence of the campaigns of the conservation plan, if it did not exist, and we had 10 or 15 plans that were available, did they give you a sense of the time and effort and cost associated with it within a ballpark for them to have done a consolidation effort?
I'm sorry we didn't get to that level of detail with them. But I know that it's a large job because it requires disaggregating often.
Then let me ask the question about to Mr. Hart. David, how long did it take you guys to do it? A year and a half?
So again, I want to go back to try and split these out. Do we agree as an executive committee that as part of this process, the council should, as a starting point, look at those long-term habitat goals that are in the various plans by region?
I'm sorry, one last question, Chair. Bill, Jim had asked the question about, had DNR done a consolidated effort? Are you aware that they have?
Not to my knowledge.
Jim?
So in all our different ecoregions, they have never looked at this data themselves?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, that's hard to
believe. I can say one of the frustrations in getting the data for the Campaign for Conservation was it didn't exist in that form, and it should, but it doesn't.
Rick?
I guess I'll keep going back to what Bob has mentioned. That you confirmed that it would be explicitly only looking at habitat rather than looking at a broader question of forest, wetlands, and perks. So I'd like a clear definition on that. Are you excluding protection, restoration, and enhancement of prairies, wetlands, and forests? Are you including that?
Bob's earlier question was a frame of reference for my response. Our earlier discussion of the asset allocation model. It talks about restore, enhance, protect prairies, wetlands, habitat, forests.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I'm sorry, I was not clear. That Bill has it right. For example, the conservation plan dealt with issues of climate change and recreation, right. And those are things that I would think would be left right. on the right. table. Everything else. Under the constitutional definition, as you described, is what I intended to ask. I'm sorry for that.
In fact, Representative Hanson, after I answered the question, I went to look at the items that were pulled out of the Minnesota Prairie Region and was surprised to not see prairie acreage there. And perhaps I just missed it. But I would assume that there would be something for that region that dealt with prairie targets. If not, that's certainly something for people to review and determine whether or not it's a valid set of goals. And if they say it's invalid without prairie, this is the conservation professionals. It ought to be added in.
Jim?
I have a question for David. David, when all these plans were coalesced, and you had the duck plan and the pheasant plan, how did you come to the determination of which of these different habitats or prairies were redundant within each plan? Who made that decision?
Oh, I don't think that we're completely sure that's been done. I think it's even more complex because some of what's in the duck plan would include native prairie and some would include grasslands, which are hoped to be restored into native prairie. There's plenty of fuzzy lines in this. There is redundancy in the numbers, and one of the tasks is to pull apart the numbers and see ultimately how you can taxpayers fix that.
So you haven't pulled apart the numbers then?
No, I don't think we've pulled
okay,
them apart.
Okay, well, no, I'm confused, Mike, because I thought that's what the offer was, is they've already done this work. They've already coalesced these numbers. But apparently they haven't.
Well, I'll defer to Bill, but my understanding, it's really a two-step process. One is to take the goals from the different plans and put them into different regions, which is what the Campaign for Conservation, my understanding, did. The second step is if there are areas of overlap. For example, the duck recovery plan, shallow lakes restoration, to make sure that we're not counting the same land base twice. And I don't think anyone has done that, is what David is saying.
That's going to need input from those that have developed those plans.
Well, then really, doesn't the DNR have to do this then?
Well,
otherwise, we're going to have our goals are going to be a lot of redundant goals out there in these different ecoregions, aren't there?
Let's use this cross-functional flow chart for something here. It's on page 7. If you look at the conservation professionals assembled by neutral facilitators, look at the first box. Sometime in July and August, they're going to be breaking them into 5-year goals and things like that. Part of the job of doing that is scrubbing out the overlap. So, yeah, I think DNR is going to have to be there. I think U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is going to have to be there. I think Ducks Unlimited is going to have to be there. I think my favorite, the Woodpecker Society, is going to have to be there. Down to the boars in town. I think they're going to all have to be there to help scrub this out and come up. The job of coming up with reasonable 5-year goals and 50-year goals is eliminating as much of that duplication as you possibly can.
Okay, well, I misunderstood Mike then, because I thought when I asked him what the Campaign for Conservation was, you know, how they were participating, is that they basically had scrubbed these numbers and they had the numbers to just insert into our different ecoregions, so we had these goals. Did I misunderstand you?
No, that was my understanding, but not the reduce the duplication. That's the part that has not been done. And they had 14 regions. My understanding was you'd have to collapse those into a different set, a smaller set that we're going to be working on.
Okay.
Is that Bill? Help me out.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. I'll go back to the flow chart. The Campaign for Conservation has one job only. And that's to accumulate by the 50-year vision objective by planning section. And then that goes down to a set of public meetings with conservationists and things like that. We can adjust the flow of this. I mean, that's why we're here. But that's where that duplication gets pulled out.
To answer your question, Jim, I don't think the duplication is going to be pulled out by a paper exercise, people sitting in a room. I think you have to engage the resource managers in the areas we're talking about, the prairie pothole region, to figure out what, in fact, are those target areas.
Okay, but it's my understanding, we're going through process here again, that what we are trying to do here is we're trying to take these ecoregions, and then we're going to collate all the different plans as to what our goals are going to be within each ecoregion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that hasn't been done.
It's been partially done.
Bill, it's been done by the 14 regions in the 50-year plan.
Their 50-year plan.
Okay. Hadn't been done elsewhere.
Okay. I guess my point is, most of the plans that we use to come up with our recommendations, the ones you have listed here, are Department of Natural Resource plans. So why wouldn't we have those people that develop these plans, collate this information for us? So our goals are based on these plans. We have professionals, you know, doing this work.
That's a valid alternative.
Yeah, we can do that. No one says if that's the wishes of the executive committee, we can ask them, and then we can...
I'm just smiling because I probably have to wait and watch on allotment issues and... Mm-hmm. We in the budget we cut administration at the end of the week, so I think there are probably going to be fewer people or some holes. So I would probably higher than your pay grade, Bill, needs to give us some idea of capacity to do that different thing.
So short of a proposal, what I'm hearing you saying is, why not ask the DNR to at least take that first cut to pulling together these plans, try to reduce the duplication, and then roll it out to the regions and have the resource managers further refine that?
Yes.
Okay. What do other members think about that? Dave? Darby?
Well, I guess I just think that there's a heck of a lot of important, useful data embedded in the campaign for conservation work. And I think it would be very reasonable for us to follow the design here and utilize the two plans that have been identified that have really done the very comprehensive stuff. I see no need to pursue other routes. But
just to say that, I want to hear from Dave, whoever does this work, they're going to go to the most work that's been done. So whoever does it's likely going to go to the compilation of plans as a starting point and then start reducing the redundancy, regardless if that's Campaign for Conservation Management Analysis or the DNR or some other private vendor.
Dave? Well, I think a couple things. One, there are some plans out there outside of what the DNR formally done that ought to be taken into consideration, because the DNR is often constricted by this is what you'll do and you won't look outside of that, which the other plans didn't ultimately do. I would recommend that on page 7, the flowchart, that the step ought to be to go from what the Campaign for Conservation comes up with. I would go to the conservation professionals directly and ask them to scrub the data before I think of going to a public hearing strategy. I think we've missed a step there, which is the data should be scrubbed first by the professionals before it gets out into the public.
My interpretation of that was the intent that there would be a two-step process with the professional doing the first scrubbing.
I don't think that's what this specifically says. So I feel very strongly that the professional should take a swipe at this. And I don't care who comes up with the base information. The professional ought to be doing the first scrub of what's included, what's not included, what's the duplication, what's
not. Rick?
I was looking through the statute and it's making its way up.
I just need it back when we're done. It's my only copy.
But I'm not sure if the question is who, but what. And since we're in kind of a large debate, that the section definition of section and subsection, what's in the statute. So we've got 5, and then colorful map is 6. And
we're only dealing with, right now, 5. Kind of put away this picture.
14 in the Campaign for Conservation. So the language talks about those sections of the bill on the top there. It says sections and subsections established by the DNR. Maybe, Bill, if you can go. And I think we've talked about that before, but it doesn't. Sometimes in the statute we say this definition that's somewhere on this.
I would refer you to page 5, where the descriptions of the 5 regions that are proposed to be used are defined. Northern Forest is the southern, western, and northern Superior uplands, northern Minnesota and Ontario peatlands, in the northern Minnesota drift and lake plains sections. These are the Minnesota, the ones that I just listed, comprising the northern forest, are the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources approved ecological sections and subsections. There is another approved Department of Natural Resources description of these same areas, and that's in 84.02. as I recall, and the distinctive feature of 84.02 regions and subregions is that it's drawn along county lines, but they're virtually the same, and they're sitting right behind you.
I'm just trying to come back to the statutory language of section and subsection. So we've got 10 that we have regionalized into 5. And Bill, you believe that's enough to meet the intent or the language that's there? Or do we have to stick with 10?
I don't think the language is definitive. And I think, therefore, we do what's reasonable at this point in time. And that gets back to, since we're adopting the philosophy that this is going to be, all of this work is going to be done in open public meetings with records and things like that, the use of 10 in the time we have, I don't believe is doable. So you do what's reasonable.
I'm going to make a suggestion so we can continue to move on, because we do need to get some version of this forwarded as a recommendation. I want to start off by just suggesting to the executive committee, and we can keep this as informal as possible if we can get some nods of the heads, and then we can just vote on it at the end. I hate to get down to have to do motions on specific language. But on page 2, what I would ask Bill to do to begin with, on the top of page 2, before existing plan review and incorporation, I'd like to have him insert a paragraph describing what he did at the outset, kind of the 30,000-foot view of what needs to be done, which is 3 steps. Take a look at the existing habitat wildlife plans, incorporate those goals for those plans, vet it by the state's conservation community, the resource managers and the people that are doing the work on the ground, and then the third step would be to roll that out to the public. And again, embedded within those long-term goals would be some specific fiscal year 2011 targets, so we know what we could realistically expect to accomplish in 1 year given the resources that are available to us. So do I see any nods of the heads from council members on the executive committee? That seems like a reasonable approach. So it's just a context piece. Jim, you okay with that?
Yeah, I guess the question is how are we going to do that?
Well, let's just take through this, and I want to move through this with some ideas, but I want others to interject as well, because I've got a number of things. So to get this moving, I want to go through a number of suggestions I want to make to this. And by the way, I think it's a good first start, Joe.
Let me clarify. That insertion is on page 2.
Yeah.
About existing plan review and incorporation.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Go to page 3, and page 3 has, and it spills over into the top of page 4, and you know, I would like to have that section recast, because as I looked at these habitat actions, and these come from the statewide comprehensive conservation and preservation plan, there are a number of good actions that directly relate to our mission, the mission of the fund we advise on. For example, protect priority land habitats. H1, H2, H3, H4, H5. H7, keep water on the landscape. You know, if we call back to the proposals we heard in February, a lot of those were good proposals. They had a habitat element, but they really had to do with clean water. And I guess just to be clear that we want to identify those habitat actions that are specific to the mission of the fund. So my proposal would be to delete the ones that may have some relevance but are really not targeted towards, you know, fish, game, wildlife, habitats, prairies, wetlands, forest, and, you know, we didn't mention in the Constitution, but aquatic systems. So I would suggest that we delete, you know, H7, and then going down these land use actions, all but L8 on the bottom of page 3, because those things, while they may be outcomes, they're really not central to the mission of the fund. And looking on the top of page 4, those also really don't, crop production, those don't have any relevance to our mission of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Bob, please.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question, a clarifying question for Bill. I think I know the answer, but as I recall, am I correct in my recollection that in the statewide conservation and preservation plan, there were no habitat actions specifically for wetlands or prairies?
I would like to defer that to Ms. Coleman, if it's okay.
Right. Sure. Ms. Coleman, if you don't mind, did you hear the question?
I did hear the question.
Yeah. Did you want to just introduce yourself for the record, please?
Certainly. My name is Jean Coleman with CR Planning. I was the coordinator for the Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan. And directly to your question, wetlands and prairies recommendations are embedded in priority land habitats, shorelands of lakes and streams, and shallow lakes.
no specific vote for those particular constitutional terms, prairies, wetlands, forests.
If I could, Mr. Chair, Mr. Schroeder, there are sub-recommendations that deal directly with prairies, directly with wetlands.
And Mr. Chair, what I'm asking is, as you're kind of figuring out what this list would look like, you might be mindful of what those are.
It's great. And so I interpret these habitat actions are really 30,000-foot level. Within each of those, there are embedded some more specific ones unique to the system, a prairie system, a wetland complex. Rick?
I would disagree with removing page 7 because, again, the constitutional language talks about wetland restoration, protecting and enhancing. So keeping water on the landscape relates to wetland protection, wetlands restoration and enhancement. I think if H7 talked about water quality, then you may have more grounds on removing that. But keeping water on the landscape, I believe that is appropriate for the Outdoor Heritage Fund relating to wetlands.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, so Representative Hansen's point is, I think another way to say it would be that you view wetlands as part of the landscape. Okay.
Other executive committee members or other council members' thoughts? We can certainly keep it in there and be like, I just read it as, I kept thinking back to some of the proposals that were really flood control or erosion control projects, and when asked specifically at the table, that's what they were, admittedly. And so I just want to make sure we don't go down that path of putting those as priority projects when they really aren't central to the mission of the fund.
Yeah, what they meant is keep it out of the dikes.
Yeah. That's right. Darby?
Yeah, I was just going to say that keeping water in the landscape, I think absolutely is consistent with with a lot of the wetlands efforts that we need. And then there's a comprehensive linkage.
Bill?
You know, maybe the rewording, keeping water in the landscape resulting in restoration. That pretty much brings it down. Maybe don't get into that, just diking for water and not restoration. Does that make any sense, or can't we do that?
Well, these are goals that are in a document, I suppose, but we certainly could interpret it the way we see fit. Jim, you okay with keeping it in?
I would take it out, too. It makes it sound like you're doing it just for the sake of keeping water in the landscape. I understand what Rick's saying, but, I mean, when you read it at face value, it sounds like you're just keeping it there to keep it there.
I'd take it out just because I fear it becomes flood control versus real habitat protection, which I think you've got restore land, wetlands, and wetland-associated watersheds in H5, which would cover it pretty well.
So for now, I hear three members saying let's take it out and make the argument so when we bring it to the council at its next meeting, if you want to try and argue it back in, do that, okay? I want to go then, I'm going to go through my recommendations. Go to page 5, if you would. I think it's really important that we convey to the public and our conservation partners that we're about habitat. I mean, really, you know, we're talking about prairies, wetlands, forests, habitat, but everything seems to be focused on the natural features which support habitat, aquatic, terrestrial. So when we talk about these regions, and I guess it's probably as appropriate on page 6 is 5, but Bill has titled in there L-SOHC planning sections. I guess I'd like to retitle those as LSOHC habitat regions, because really it really does demark in my mind the major 5 areas that Bill has identified. These are really based on the unique habitats, a predominantly forested habitat to the north, a unique forested habitat to the southeast. We have a prairie habitat region. Certainly there'll be trees and there'll be wetlands, but kind of that. The metro is really a unique habitat area in of itself, given the population. So if folks are okay with that, it's more for just trying to more clearly define what we're about when we talk about these regions. They're really focusing on the habitat. Rick?
No, I disagree. I think that we're talking about, and in the statute it says ecological sections and subsections. And so habitat is a part of an ecological section or subsection or region. Habitat is a part of forests, wetlands, and prairies. But in those ecological regions, you may have a forest that has wetlands in it or has segments of prairie or vice versa. So I think, you know, I'm sure when we get into the full committee, we're going to continue to have this debate about habitat. But
It is protect, restore, and enhance prairies, wetlands, and forest, and habitat, not only habitat.
I would just think we're better off saying sections and taking planning or habitat out. It's just a definition of how we're looking at things.
Okay. Garden, Jim?
I just, could you point me to the line specifically?
Well, just go to the top of page 6. Go to the, that's the map. Oh. Above the map is a title, and what I was suggesting, the word planning, I agree, Dave, planning doesn't, we're really about action. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're funding. We're not funding planning studies. We're funding work for, to restore, protect, and enhance. And so I was thinking of trying to come up with a better phrase that more accurately described what we're about or what these regions are about. So my suggestion was LSOHC habitat regions. Davis suggested drop that word habitat and use regions, I guess.
Well,
to not confuse it with ECS.
I don't think they're specific to habitat, and I don't think they're specific to planning. It's how we're going to frame our work.
Okay. So you're just saying LSOHC sections. So Darby, Jim, any thought on that? Maybe you're comfortable with the way it is.
Or ecological regions. I mean, I agree. Planning, I don't think that's not.
For what it's worth, I like the habitat thing. You know, that's a question I have here, too, at all, when it comes to this discussion of the ecological thing. It's ecosystems, we got into that at the end of the session of the well-known.
Other thoughts?
I agree.
So we don't have an agreement of any sort right now. We've got three different ideas. Bill, please.
I don't think ecosystem is in the statute. Habitat is. I think it's a good fit. Is that fair?
Well, I was just trying to make, when we talk to the public, so for example, I'm going to be doing a PR thing tonight on the radio, and I'm going to be talking about where we're going. That's what they asked. What's the idea of where we're going to be going in the future? If I describe it in terms of these subsections and subsections, regions, in the area of habitat, which, I mean, no matter how you slice and dice it, we're talking about work that's going to benefit habitat. That's what the fund is about, whether it be on prairies, wetlands, forests, or aquatic systems. I'm just looking for a term that is a better descriptor of how we define our work.
Right. Well, the statute on page 5, under words of the regions, Minnesota law requires the council to plan using Minnesota Department of Natural Resources approved ecological sections and subsections. That's what the statute says. Now, people may not like the word ecology or ecological. That's what the statute says. Ecological.
In addition to that, that's what they're called. I mean, that's what they've been named as ecological subsections. That's how it appears.
So one of the reasons I try to use a different set of terms is that there is a hierarchy of, you know, provinces, sections, subsections, all the way down to very small units. And if we start using parts of their terms, that could be really confusing. Certainly, the sections or the regions that Bill has suggested are built upon the ecological classification system, but they're distinct. I mean, we have a metro region or section, and while it certainly has delineations of one or two of the 14 subsections, it's not. So I'm just cautious about using terms that are similar in nature, and people start getting confused about what are the regions we're talking about.
Question, does the statute result in habitat restoration? Is that what the statute does?
You know, Bill Becker pointed out on in the law, it says that these regions shall be based upon. In other words, they don't need to be, but they're based upon, which we have. I mean, the ones that Bill is proposing clearly are based upon the ecological classification system. Well, I think what we need to do, unless people have a different opinion, I think we'll just call them LOHC sections for now. We'll delete the word plan, and then I think we need to make the case one way or another that they're either habitat, ecological, planning, or whatever. But for now, the graphic goes before the council, we'll just call them LOHC sections. And then we'll retitle that. I have one more suggestion that I'd like the executive committee to consider, and that is on the definitions on page 10. I think Bill did a nice job, and Senator Chagre, clarifying the intent that was read not only in the conference committee about not only this provision, but two other very important provisions of the council's funding and its work going forward. And the definitions being a key one. And so my suggestion is, and it's more making sure we don't confuse the public. I mean, I think all of us understand the definitions we're using and how we develop that. But my suggestion would be, if you go down to the paragraph that follows our definitions that we developed this last time around, to put after the first sentence where it says on the third line, second and third line, it ends with recommendations destined to go before the 2010 legislature period. My suggestion to the executive committee is to consider just deleting the rest of that. Certainly that those definitions are in law, but I think now we've got two definition sets in this document, and I think they're going to be confusing to the public. I think Bill's sentence that describes that these definitions are to be used by the council for this next go-around provides clarity, as Senator Chaudhry said, about how we interpret protect, enhance, restore. I think adding the second set of definitions might add confusion. But let's hear from other members. Jim, what's your thought?
I agree.
All right. Rick?
So I think when we set these definitions, we said, and we should go back and check the tape, that it was for this initial round of applications. And that definitely, I mean, there are a number of things related to the question here. Again, going back to habitat or ecological systems, ecosystems. But there's, I think, a question there relating to the definition of protect, and that is protect only fee title acquisition. And I think there are, and I think the Constitution provides for other types of protection other than fee title acquisition, and sending out an RFP that says that the only definition of protection is fee title acquisition, I don't think needs the Constitution.
What are you thinking of?
I mean, you also need easements.
Yeah, or easements, right?
Right. Well, I think that there are other things besides acquisition of either fee title or easements. I think there are things related to when we have an infestation of pests that are protecting forests. It's not a restoration question or an enhancement question. It's a protection relating to detection or response. I think those are protections of either habitat or
doesn't really enhance cover the other actions that you're talking about?
Enhances, the way it's defined here, is increasing the ability that you may have to have reaction. Do you believe that increasing the ability?
Well, you were talking, you talked about the Emerald Ash Borer. I mean, wouldn't that action be really our definition of enhancer, or increase the ability of habitat to sustain themselves?
It may. Many of the members here were not in hours or days of testimony, where both the Commissioner of Natural Resources, I know the Commissioner specifically defined the protection included things other than fee title acquisition or easements. On the record, Natural Resources on the record saying that it was broader than only acquisition.
So for the purpose of this discussion, just recall that the agreement was that we could use the council's definitions that we originally established, which are stated here. What I'm saying in this proposal is that for the purposes of telling the public how we plan to proceed and how we plan to define those three activities, we use what the House and the Senate affirmed that we would be using this next go around. That's all. So, Darby?
I see what you're saying. I've got no problems with that. Okay.
Wayne.
I had to say one thing as long as I can.
Went for Bob.
First of all, let me just tell you that everything that I had a concern with in this document probably you've already addressed.
So you didn't have to say anything.
So but I just wanted to clarification when I was looking at the document at home, it came to the definitions and then also to the mission statement. Am I correct in assuming that at the end of everything we can almost say for the benefit of fish, game, and wildlife self-protect, for the benefit of fish, game, and wildlife, we restore for those benefits, and we enhance wetlands for the benefits of fish, game, and wildlife? Is that what the terminology says? I mean, does it really say that we are, that at the end of everything we're doing, and everything we are doing, is supposed to benefit fish, game, and wildlife?
Should be the ultimate result.
If that's the ultimate result, then the definitions that we have on top, when we talk about sustained fish, game, and wildlife, is correct. And then the ones that we are working with below doesn't say anything about sustaining or anything affecting game, and fish, and wildlife. And that was a concern that I had.
So I'm hearing at least three of us saying for now, you know, take it out. Dave, I know Rick, I heard your concern. Dave, any thoughts?
I'm flexible.
Okay. So for now, Bill, we've got three of the executive committee saying let's take it out. And I think those are the major concerns. There's some editorial stuff that, you know, we can work with Bill on, but... what other specific changes, Rick?
I think I've got two questions, and it relates to the ranking of proposals. And I think one of the things that... This is on 9 and 10. And when we get to motions and when we get to using the mock thing, the process used this year really... it was not transparent on how each member voted for what project. And I think that that's very important that we see everyone here is a public official now, and that they, how they vote should be transparent to the public when they vote for these projects. That's one question. The second is on the averaging aggregate question, because, and maybe that is handled by how the language is on motions by members, but what happened last time is you had an aggregation of responses. So let's just say we had a project that maybe 6 people voted for full funding, 3 people voted for partial funding, and 3 people voted for zero funding. So the average is what was funded based on motions. And maybe that worked or did not work, but the motions that were made were on the aggregate projects, moving everything over 7 based on the average of whether that. And I think moving those projects, whether they're at full funding, if there's 7, if there's 7 votes for full funding or 7 votes for another funding, I think when we aggregate and put the screen on the wall, I mean, as Bill mentioned earlier, you're taking 2/3 of it that you're putting together as a whole, and then you're debating the smaller portions of what's left over. I think it would be more appropriate and clearer and more transparent with accountability of voting on those projects and seeing whether they rise or fall based on what they are rather than the problem. We had some projects that were at odd numbers because those were the averages rather than what may be the best funding resource.
So if I'm hearing you right, Rick, you're suggesting that for any project that gets at least an allocation from 7 or more members, we vote without regard to the amount, whether that we should fund it?
Well, I think you have a motion on what the funding should be rather than the average. Because what we took last time was the average. Mm. You have a motion made on whatever what that...
So stepwise, a motion on the project, we can start with the average and then a motion to either increase that or decrease that.
We did that.
I thought we did.
Yeah, I don't recall.
I thought that was what we did with all of them. Because, in fact, I know that for a couple of them, that's how we handled some of them.
But you're starting with the average rather than what, I mean, I think you should have a motion in terms of what the action should be.
But isn't that self-evident? I mean, if we have a project that gets 7 or more votes out of 12, I mean, just ask people to verbalize that. I don't know how you would have a different outcome. Unless I'm misreading the question. Bill?
Are you saying that if Ducks Unlimited comes in, for an example, and they have 7 projects, we should vote on each and every project instead of just the general Ducks Unlimited proposal, which includes the 7 projects?
What I'm saying is when you have aggregated averages, you can, what's called bullet balloting on amount and whether it's in or not. You can pick and you can rise that level up or down and set the average before we get here or after.
An individual could vote in favor of Bob Gunther's project and allocate a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the consequence of that will be that his project is put on the list, it lowers the average, and may increase the chance for an alternative to be then potentially on the list. It's a lot more thinking than I'm quite capable of doing. I'm lucky to get home at night.
I'm just thinking of, and this may not need to be in the RFP, but it's something I think we should look at, the process of how we actually pick, when we actually vote on these projects, because I think there's, as you go from year to year, you could have more skill being applied on how to set the averages.
It's called a game. The body of economics is called game theory.
Mr. Chair, I think maybe broadly Representative Hansen might be on something, which is we may want to have further discussion about the specifics of how this gets done. I recall Wayne making a legitimate point that, you know, we took the top 1 through 7 projects and then we dove down to number 10. I believe I dove down to number 10 to draw up. I think that's a point we should think about.
Well, I agree. And I think everyone is agreeing to what Rick is saying, that somehow we need to look at a decision on the project on its merits and then the amount that we fund. Bill?
Well, I think he said 2 points, and the first one I'd like to go back to and state in a different manner, and that is that all rankings and allocation votes and data shall be handled as public data.
Yeah, that's right.
So it'll be laid out on the individual basis.
And that actually eliminates some of the gaming so that you can see it.
That's right.
I mean, not all of it, but it would at least help us look and see that Bob's being an idiot by what he's doing, but he's doing it for a reason.
Don't need to see anything.
And Gunther can find my errors.
I understand what Rick is saying, but at the same time, I seriously would like to not fund a project at the full amount they ask for. I'd also like to be able to say, will this project go on if we don't fund it at a higher level than this? And I think one of the things that I think we should justly be proud of is the fact that there is a lot of matching in everything that we did. And we leveraged a lot of dollars. And I'd hate to see us automatically fund everything at the level they asked for, because I know the project he's talking about could have been funded at a little lesser level. People in elderly would have gladly paid it.
Look, I think we can deal with it.
I think we're talking in the same way. Darby, please. Yeah. So let's try and kind of wrap this part up for any other changes. Again, we're just making a recommendation to the council.
No, I just have a question. Nowhere in here do I see any reference to the collaboratives. Have we decided not to do that, or am I missing something? Or
You're not missing anything. When we heard from leaders of collaboratives, we heard some recommendations not to do the collaboratives again. And to the extent that the collaboratives were not done under the wing of the council, and were not widely publicized, and were, I think, falsely informative of the openness of our project. I think we're better off approaching it with this approach that still focuses on issues and focuses on expertise, but clearly lays out the public's role and the ability for them to wade in.
So we could then use language in the request for proposals that would sort of guide proposers. There's an area that we want to make sure gets addressed, or multiple areas, whatever. We could accomplish that.
It would be the instructions to the facilitators, neutral facilitators, on the third step to where those guidelines and guideposts are available, to pull them out, to make sure that they're articulated in the final document that forms and informs the call for requests.
Yeah. Well, I certainly recall the comments that folks made about that. I mean, the leaders of the collaborative were saying, don't do it like you did. But I wasn't sure. Some of them admitted that there were some benefits to it. I don't feel strongly. I'm not arguing to put them in. It's just, I wanted to verify the fact that we're seeing it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, my view is that we're taking a lot of the same actors and we're reconfiguring it a bit, but most importantly, as Bill has laid out, it's going to be a facilitated, publicly noticed process.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree with that, and that was one of the real weak points last night, no question.
David?
So I have a few comments and suggestions.
Okay.
On page 6, under step 1, and this would also relate to page 7, just going back to my point of we take a vision. I think the first step has to be the conservation professionals look at it before we jump directly to the public.
Yes.
And I think page 6 jumps with the second sentence directly to the public meeting, and I think we need to insert a sentence that just indicates the intention is conservation professionals provide input and advice and editing before we get there, and then to reflect the same thing on page 7. So the arrow that goes from accumulate 50-year vision and directly down to public meetings would shortcut it. Conservation professionals assembled by neutral facilitators.
And their task in that box would be, again, to validate and
recommend changes.
Okay. Possibly prioritize.
Yeah, whatever the professionals think are there will have a lot of weight with me, certainly.
Hey, Mr. Chair, yeah, Bill, certainly understand David's point. Any sense on, do you expect that that's a time commitment consideration to the calendar?
I think it will add a week or two.
But maybe save time with anxiety later?
Yeah, I think it's a real worthwhile step to do. And I'm almost ashamed for having left it out, trying to shortcut the deal with the combined meeting.
I'd assume that they were separate, so.
And then the public meeting goes over to the right.
Yeah.
So it's completely in the last column.
Okay. Do you have another one?
Then
on this point,
I just jumped. Could David just go over that again?
Sure. If you look at page 7 specifically, you've got to start with two arrows, one going towards campaign for conservation, one going to priority statewide conservation and preservation plan. I think from that, you see the one arrow from the comprehensive statewide plan goes directly over to the conservation professionals, where the campaign for conservation goes to the public meetings. I'm just recommending that the campaign for conservation piece goes to the conservation professionals instead of going down to public meeting. So we're really asking the conservation professionals to weigh in on that work, not the public, and not shortchanging and excluding the conservation professionals from that work. It's almost, my concern is more about excluding that step than anything else. Does that make sense, Jim?
So if I interpret, Dave, what you're saying, you've got the, you're looking at the three, under the Campaign for Conservation box, then going lower and to the right, that's the next step. And then from that, you go directly to that public meeting
that's
box.
That's right, yeah. So it just be a cascade instead of a cross.
Okay, so what is that first, what are we doing this one?
Yeah.
So what is that first box going to do then? What are they actually going to do?
So Dave, the question was the first box, what are they going
to
do?
I think they'll come up with a straw proposal for everyone to react to.
Those are the plans that we've been talking about, the different...
To just take the work that's been done and put it into a format the professionals then get to tear apart. Or say, this is brilliant, it's right on. And I can't imagine there won't be some.
And then, so who will we give that to then?
Conservation professionals.
Being...
Well, people from DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, mm-hmm. Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, and for that matter, if it's a public meeting, so we do it for the Ducks.
Well, we're really trying to focus on the resource management and people who are doing the work.
But it's not going to be a public meeting. I mean, they're going to have documents.
It's a work session. I interpret it as a working session. At the public meeting, I mean, they're all public, but the public meeting to
okay,
get it is the third.
All right, but if you do that, I mean, they come up with a vision. I mean, they're halfway home. You're not going to restructure that whole vision, even if it is backwards. I mean, that document should be, you know,
it should be most of the way there.
It should be studied before. I mean, people should have the opportunity to look at that before any open meetings. It should be torn apart before it gets to the open meeting.
Yes, by the conservation. That's what the video was saying.
I think that's
yeah, absolutely. That's what he's saying. Anything else?
hang on while I review my notes. I was on page 9, the bottom set of bullets. I had a concern that it seemed like we left out that sort of a basic tenet that we were about long-term assets, not about annual maintenance of things. I would hate to see us get into a let's every year allocate money to harvest milfoil off the same lake over and over and over without any long-term benefit. And I didn't see that in here.
Might I suggest that what you're talking about is a screening criteria?
Yeah,
that's fine.
On page 8, top of page 9.
That would be fine. I just, I thought of it when I got down there, Bill.
So I think everyone agrees with that. Can you get some language to Bill on that?
I can
or work with Bill? Anything else?
And this may be opening Pandora's box, but in the long-term vision that we're putting together, I would assume we're going to end up with sort of a, on some level, the ability to create a range of activity from a financial standpoint. It won't be, if you're going to know in zone one you want to spend in the next 25 years $50 million on this activity and $20 million on that, and in zone two you want to spend $250 million and $2 million, how do we make that rough allocation have some bearing in our decision? How do we sort of follow through from
the vision piece, the scale of the vision in any zone to action in that zone, so we don't find ourselves sending all of the money up to the far northwest corner of the state because there's a project up there or a series of projects and forgetting everything else. Where do we find the balance in terms of the ultimate recommendations over a period of time? Because what we did with the forest this year would probably fall outside of any specific year. If you look at it in the scale of 5 years or 25 years, it'd be okay. And I just wonder if we need to address that here or think about that or give up on it for now because it's too hard to do without knowing what the numbers are.
Members, thoughts on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, David, you know, I don't have a specific answer. I thought it's exactly about this point, and there would be a, you know, mathematical equations that you could theoretically come up with on any given year basis. The sum total of the opportunity within that year across all the regions is, you know, 25% of whatever the available funds in one region and 15 in another or whatever, something along those lines. And, you know, that I think that's probably worthy of a discussion. Not at this point, but I think it's definitely worthy of discussion prior to putting a request out on the street. I think having a pretty good idea, I think, will help us a lot and help the proposers. You know, we don't want to create an expectation that we are unwilling or unable to deliver on. And, you know, I understand the concept. I don't have a clear answer, but I have thought.
I don't know how to do it, and okay. I'm happy to do it at the time every year you have an RFP process to decide if you want to create guidance, in essence, in your RFP somehow. But I don't think we can not have that discussion.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
Yeah, we don't want to look back 10 years from now and say.
We excluded the southwest part of the state.
Sure. Yeah, we front-loaded and never finished front-loading certain areas.
Bill, and then I want to hear from Greg.
I hope at some time, as we're going through this process with the public and the professionals and putting together the asset allocation model, that we look at 50-year, 25, 5, and 1, and that be the point at which we start to deal with this issue of distribution, both on a geographic and an urgency basis. So at least with that, the urgency factor involved in how much we're going to look for. I think also our one-year target has to be realistic. It may not add up to the available funds, but it's got to be pretty darn close.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you use a money market account, performance, you know, in any given year the accounts have 25% performance, but over a 5-year period it settles out at, you know, 5.6 or something along those lines. I think that's,
and that should be reflected.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just thinking for David's perspective here, I thought, you know, we do have this 25-year strategic plan that was in the legislation last year, and in there it does say the plan for restoring and protecting enhancing wetlands, prairies, forests, habitat for fishing game must be based on ecological sections and subsections established by the Department of Natural Resources and be based on current science in this last part and achieve benefits across all ecological sections within the state. So the 25-year plan should address that. The question is what do you do, I think as Bill was saying, with the one-year plan? So your 25-year plan, the one that you need to have in by 2011, should address that.
Okay. I think everyone is in agreement that at some point, probably late summer, as we near the point of a call, we need to revisit this. Any other suggestions? What about, I think we're kind of wrapped up, except for maybe, I always want to make sure that we're either comfortable or not comfortable with this initial compilation of the existing plans and how we move forward. Darby and then Jim.
I was just going to comment on something Rick told me. It was an issue for him when he had to step out, but now that he's back, I'll let him talk about the logo.
Just on page 9 out of 10, the 1, 2, 3, 4 bullet points on the signage, and you probably need to just reference the statutory language in there. So
yep.
Yeah, big deal.
So for maybe for Wayne and benefit, recall the language on that that's in the law now?
The Arts Board is going to have a contest for design of a logo for signage on projects for all of the four funds. And then there's a requirement that those be used, that logo should be used on the signage. And when there's construction occurring and the access points as well about where the dollars came from. So it's in statute. We just need to reference that.
Who gets to approve that?
The Arts Board.
The Arts Board.
Arts Board does that for all four funds.
Yeah.
Jim. Jim, I think we're going to do that. Jim is a great artist, so.
I was just wondering if we had a three-step plan when we started here today, and it's been altered. I wonder if Bill or could just give us the 30,000-foot view of the plan now as how we've changed or how we're going to do different things.
30,000 feet. I think that the biggest change from the three-step process is that basically step one becomes two separate steps, and we have a four-step process. Step one being to pull the get back there. Step one being the statewide conservation prioritization plan issues, getting those organized and in the proper detail by the regions, and then step two being getting the targets, 25-year, 50-year, 25-year, one-year targets laid out and ready for analysis. Step three, which is currently step two, should be the conservation professionals going over that data and evaluating it, adding to it, prioritizing it, validating it. Then the final step is to take that, step four, take that to the public and in a clear public input meeting. All the other things I've talked about are public as well, but in a clear objective to get public input on priorities, those sorts of things, completeness for the local region.
Any other comments?
Well, just from a process standpoint, Bill, the meetings of the conservation professionals will be noticed public meetings of the council, correct?
Of a body of the council.
Body of the council, and the body being?
TBD.
Yeah.
Yep.
The planning crew. I have to think back to community government, city government, and it is not uncommon for city, say, planning commissions to break their work down into, say, parks and recreation and then have a parks task force. And it is a public entity, and I think that's the way we're handling this is in parallel to that process.
Any further discussion? Rick?
I think this is a segue question that if we do it, but if we are going to have the plan, I mean, this is a recommendation to the full council. We have a meeting scheduled next week, which is also supposed to have public input, but it'd be hard to have the conservation professionals provide. I mean, how do you get the other three steps in a week? There's a public meeting, or maybe I'm reading the schedule wrong on what the anticipation is for next week.
And next week, there is a meeting. This will be before the council. The public can comment on this process.
Then this process officially rolls out. Step one is two, three, and four.
So the meeting on the 16th, if you go back to the flowchart, is that start step. And then we sit down with Mr. Hubinger and figure out how to get these facilitators on board.
Rick?
So the meeting on the 15th, the evening meeting beforehand?
16th.
I thought there was a public meeting on the 15th.
No, you're correct about that, and that's to provide the public the opportunity to talk directly to council members.
And is that the purpose of that meeting? I've heard different things here on whether that's please fund my project. This is the best 40 acres that needs to be protected. That's not what that public input. Is it an open mic, or is it?
It's closer to an open mic.
So Rick, my intake is that it's closer to open mic. We probably, well, we can't prohibit those types of statements coming out, but we're really, what I'm hearing, and I think what a number of members are, is the council needs a greater presence, a presence in outstate Minnesota. This is an opportunity afforded to people in that area to get kind of to jumpstart and get us a sense of what are the big issues out there in habitat and conservation.
Mr. Chair, just to clear, there is no meeting scheduled for June 15th.
No, it's the 16th.
June 15th. There's no meeting that day. I think I heard someone say
16th and 17th.
16th and 17th. Yeah. There are a couple of them.
My intent for that meeting is to do a press release, and we will be specifically asking people of the public to come and tell us what their vision is for the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
Okay.
That's different than the process. The vision for the Outdoor Heritage Fund is different than the proposed process.
Right. Sure. I misunderstood your question when I responded at first, Rick. I was thinking you were talking about the council meeting, where we usually have public input as well.
Any further discussion? Yeah, Wayne.
Oh, just a question on your meetings. Not related to the certain thing, but the information is out so far. It didn't have, some of it had dates, some have times, possible locations, Alexandria or Fergus Falls.
Can we have
I'm wondering if people are going to know.
Yeah, can we kind of have defer that conversation, which is the next item after Greg? But I want to get this document formally adopted and recommended for consideration by the council. Is there any further discussion on the motion that we started with to adopt and recommend for approval to the full council this document as modified by the executive committee this afternoon? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And carried. So we are going to, with these changes forward, a recommendation. Greg, you've been patient. Thank you. I asked you to come to the mic, and it really does relate to a lot of what we've been talking about is how we're going to proceed. And specifically, if you could just enlighten us a bit about, I guess introduce yourself and the role you play with the LCC and how you envision this transition unfolding both fiscally as well as administratively.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Greg Huebinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In effect, of July 1st, our commission will be formally responsible for providing administrative support to the council. I've had a number of discussions with several of you, with Mr. Becker at times and with the chair and with Bob Schroeder about this transition. Three immediate pieces come to mind. One is, first is hiring staff, second is interim support until staff is hired, and then third, some cash flow items. Other pieces that I...
No, those are the three big ones.
Mr. Chair, like the executive branch, the legislative branch also has a hiring freeze on, and so we've had conversations with the leadership offices about getting an exemption from that freeze so they can hire staff for the council. Had that conversation last week with the staff directors. They need to talk to Senator Pogemiller and to Speaker Anderson Kelleher about getting that approval. So we're working on that piece. I've worked with the chair and with Mr. Schroeder about the position description. I think we had a couple of minor suggestions from the draft that you submitted to us, and I think that's pretty much ready to go. We've got the posting that would be published in the papers and on the website ready to go. So once we get that approval, I think we're pretty much set.
And Mr. Chairman, that position description reflects the comments that I've gotten from members of council.
But as you hinted at earlier, it's unlikely that that person would be on board, at least the director would be on board by July 1. It's not an extensive process. I think it can be done in about 4 to 6 weeks. So we'll be moving along as soon as we get the approval from the leadership here. That raised the issue about interim support until that staff is hired. I'm assuming that we'd have a conversation with you, Mr. Chair, and with Mr. Schroeder about contracting with DNR to continue providing administrative support as they have been until staff are brought on board. And I think that's a fairly straightforward process and not a difficult one to finish up. Third issue is cash flow. The legislation anticipates the Department of Finance making available funds other than from the legacy amendment that, as you said, won't be available until the middle of August for cash flow needs. I talked to Department of Finance staff, and the usual source of that funding is the general fund, but there is a deficit projected now from the general fund, and so it's not a slam dunk about how this gets done. The Department of Finance is working on some guidelines for how agencies will accomplish this, and that's supposed to be out any day now, and that would give us some direction about how to proceed. As someone referenced, it's not just the general fund that's available. You can access other funds for doing that. So we'll be exploring that, I'm assuming. But
yeah, Bob?
Hey, Mr. Chair Gregory, your estimate of the cash flow need for that 45-day period would be roughly?
Oh, I think it was $10,000.
Right. Okay.
So these pieces sort of interlock. It doesn't make much. If Department of Finance concludes that there isn't funding available until the legacy amendment funds actually become available, it doesn't make much sense to start the hiring process because if we don't know that we can bring them on board. So we have to get a couple pieces tied together before we start that process.
Mr. Chair, if Finance does suggest, Greg, that there is no cash in any fund available, then can the council contract and utilize the services of someone from DNR starting July 1st.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Schroeder, I haven't explored that specific question with Finance.
Let's hope you don't have to.
Oh, yes.
But that is that is within the realm of possibility.
It is.
Questions? Anything else? I mean, this is a very good update. Got a lot of work to do administratively just to get someone on board and to start be able to move forward and to make this transition, as well as continue the council's work forward with the goal of getting our recommendations to the legislature by the end of the year. So it'll be really challenging, to be quite honest. Jim?
Greg, just a quick question. How will the hiring process work? Will you screen the candidates then and just... I mean, how will that actually work?
Great. Mr. Chair, the process that we would anticipate using is one where the LCC would be responsible for finishing up the job description, which I think is pretty much done now. We would post that the availability of the job in the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press, we alternate, and then post it also in a number of other publications in the minority communities for affirmative action purposes. And then on the SAR Council website and on the LCC website. Usually we leave it open for a couple of weeks. We accept the applications. Then we establish a staff panel to do the initial screening since this is a nonpartisan position. And we usually ask for one person from House Research, one person from Senate Council and Research, and then myself. We look at all the applications, do the initial interviews. We set a pretty wide net to look at perhaps 10 or a dozen applicants, and then forward the names to the chair for final action. The chair might decide to have interviews by the personnel committee. If it's done by the personnel committee, that'd be an open meeting. If instead the chair chose to have a group of members interview those candidates, it would not be a formal committee, and they could do that privately.
So Greg, just on that point, I didn't know that distinction, so that if it's an official committee of the council, that is subject to the open meeting law, even for personnel matters.
That's correct. And then presumably the full council would be asked to ratify the recommendation of either the chair of that smaller group.
I'm curious what you think the likely stumbling blocks are of your plan to get us up and running in terms of what's the likelihood we're going to have either or hiring freeze problems?
I think that there is good a likelihood of the hiring freeze being a challenge. I think there may be some minor roadblocks or take a little bit of time to work through the obstacle of the funding. But hopefully that should be figured out in the next week or so.
Mr. Hebinger, the state government appropriations bill that provided cuts to the LCC, how many cuts under the areas? I mean, are there layoffs? Are there positions that are being held open elsewhere in the area that are under your jurisdiction?
Were allocated 3% reductions in the state government finance bill. We've been holding positions vacant for about a year, and so our office will not need to lay people off to reach that budget target. We have a half a dozen positions open.
Rick Hall?
And is it correct that because of separation of powers that unallotments are not likely in the legislative branch?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the legislative understanding of unallotments is that the governor cannot unallot to either the judicial or the legislative branch. The legislative branch has voluntarily unallotted in the past and did so for FY09. The governor has not made a request yet that I know of to the House and Senate to unallot further as a result of the reductions for 10 and 11.
Mr. Kibbinger, if the governor did ask legislative leadership to deal up more money, that would probably result in layoff. Likely?
Right.
It depends on the amount.
It depends on the amount.
Any other questions for Greg? Thank you, and thanks for your help with this transition. Let's turn now to the second and last item on the agenda, which is the summer schedule. Bill, do you want to just briefly walk us through this? And what I want to get out of this is, again, we're going to forward this as a recommendation to the council. Obviously, we have to do some meeting setting because our next meeting will be when we take up our schedule of meetings. So just keep that in mind. But
with that, Bill, we are set to have four sets of meetings, three of which are outside the metropolitan region between now and end of September. The first one, which we've been working furiously on in the last couple of days, is a meeting, and it hasn't been finalized. It's a decision of the committee here today to have a business meeting and public input meeting on the 16th, either in Alex or Fergus. The reason there's a question there is that there are two conventions being held in Fergus Falls, which was our desired, recommended place to meet, and all of the motel rooms are booked. So the backup plan there is to have the business meeting in Alex, the public input meeting in Alex, stay in Alex, and then drive up to Fergus to the Prairie Wetlands Center, where Rex Johnson and Kevin Brennan will provide us with a description of the history of Minnesota wetlands, fundamental conservation planning at the landscape level, strategic wetland restoration, waterfowl migration, reproduction, restoration techniques, and the value of planning and restoring at the wetland complex level. They're working with DNR, and I have to correct that John Jasky is not with the DNR, he's with Bowser.
I was wondering if he changed his job.
And his name is J-S-C-K-E. John and Tim have been working with Kevin, Dave Shad, and Simon and Hirsch of DNR have also been working with him. And once Rex provides the educational overview, we'll take some time to go out and look at restored wetland complexes, potentially restored wetland complexes. I've asked them to find one, or at least one that's been poorly done. They may not be able to find a poorly done one, I don't know. But that's the...
So poorly done, you can't find it.
This is the year when
he
was
born. It's right on 94.
So, that's what we're planning on for next week. If you make the recommendation today, I will make arrangements, get arrangements out to people. Just a little quick discussion. If we don't do the public meeting and the business meeting in Alex and decide to do it in Fergus Falls, we can stay at the Prairie Wetlands Center. It's a dorm situation. Each dorm room has four bunk beds with a private bath. There are 14 dorm rooms. The good thing about this is they cost us $15 a piece. Bring your own sleeping bag, linens, pillows, towels, etc. That's so the alternative is to do that, or I've got a half a dozen rooms reserved in Alex.
So Bill, just on that point, we have two places where we could hold our meeting. So in on the 16th, so you have a room, a public meeting room that we could have our business meeting in Alex as well.
We are in the process of tracking them down, yes.
Okay. So I guess the first question that Bill is looking for some direction from us is, do you want to stay at the Prairie Wetlands Learning Center, or do you want to stay in Alexandria the first night? And I have never been there. I've been to many ELCs. I haven't been to that one. Jim or Rick or Darby? Dave?
Jim? I've been there. I mean, it's a beautiful facility. It's kind of, you know, barrack-style accommodations, but... I guess it's a personal preference. It's a beautiful new facility.
They've offered to arrange to have food catered in, so we don't have to go out to eat, that sort of thing, if we stay there.
So Wayne, is that a place where you would commute? How far is that from Perm?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. I've got a week long of conservation planning training in Alexandria next week. So I'm going to be at the Alexandria all week long anyway. So if it's in the middle of the day, I may not be able to get off to drive to Fergus Falls because that's another 120 miles that way and then come back.
Let me ask you this. If we were to have it in Alex for the business meeting, would you be able to attend?
I'll take off time from the training to do that.
In Alex?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that that's our decision then. If we can get another council member there, that would be my recommendation. Any objections?
And then just stay at the center there at Fergus.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we stay in Alex, we have to rent two things. We have to get motel rooms for people and a meeting room. So I guess my recommendation would be have our business meeting in Alex, and we could drive up to the Prairie Wetland Learning Center and stay there that evening, and then the following day we'll have our presentations at the center, go out in the field.
Dave? Well, I do everything in Alexandria myself, but... That's just me.
Right. My concern is 1 week notice in terms of clarifying and getting it locked in so we're at the end of the day, business night here, so we're 1 week out.
Yep.
I think it's good to have a meeting in June because we can pay for it and it moves the ball forward. I may not be able to make one of those days. As a conflict, but I think that's the main point. But I think when we do tours, we should have a purpose for them, and that there's not something where when we visit something that there's a belief that I want to make sure these are projects where there's a knowledge gained rather than an expectation that this is a project that we're going to fund.
Absolutely. Yep. Very well stated. I would concur with that, Rick. So, I'm not hearing any... Yeah, wait.
The only talking for other people who have said that there wasn't a definite place or date assigned yet and some concern, well, now I've got this plan, I've got that plan. They were hoping that maybe that could be changed to the last week of June so that there'd be at least 2 weeks for to get to rearrange schedules. A lot of people like to participate, but they don't even know where it's at yet.
People didn't want to meet on Monday. People didn't want to meet on Friday. So we zeroed in on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in two of those days. And the 15th and the 16th, at the time we collected the data, was the only here in June where we had seven people, it looked like, at the time. And we've gotten that information out, and I assume we still have the seven. The next best time, according to this data, which is a little old, is Tuesday and Wednesday, the 23rd and 24th.
And would we have a quorum then?
Well, let's take a poll here.
Not me.
Well, not me. Yeah. I'm afraid that is
okay.
Bill, did you have a
problem? No. I mean, I'm fine with the 23rd and 24th. So. And I think just to know that this wasn't going to be a real easy task to do here. It's a short period of time, so you know.
I mean, I think if we start playing around with the schedule now, we're going to find that just less people can participate. Our schedules have all filled up. Yeah. I think we have to go with the only times that Bill found were the a quorum of the council can participate.
There is the other alternative, and that's to not meet in June and shift this out to maybe double up in September or early October. But that's a pleasure of the council.
I think doing that personally would set us back.
About the 30th and the 1st. And then, Rick, we could have the expenditure on the 30th. Is that what you're concerned about?
Yeah.
You could have the rooms and the meals on the 30th and meet for the tour and leave from the tour, so actually you wouldn't have any expense on the 1st.
How many members, Bill, could attend on the 30th and the 1st?
When we did the poll, that was 7.
I could as well. I didn't. I did both because potential conflict. Was I one?
I don't know. If I was one, the answer was I was wrong. I can't now.
You cannot. But, and I can't either.
So it seems like everybody can make it on this coming week.
Yeah, I think that's we have to just stick with it.
So if the council votes to do the 16th and the 17th as described here, the idea is travel is up to the individual. However, I have reserved a van and will take anybody who contacts me up from the SOB or the DNR building, one of the two. And we plan on having a business meeting at about 2 in the afternoon to 4. Got an extended business meeting. Have to do the business quickly. Take a little time off. And then from 5:30 to 8 o'clock, a public input, public meeting. And then the next day, leave the learning center, or go to the learning center, or assemble at the learning center at 9 a.m., go through the instruction, educational instruction, and then go out into the field, come back around 12:30, 1:30, somewhere in there, and lunch will be available, and then head on home so people can get back to the Twin Cities by a reasonable time.
And I'm sorry, Bill, where is the meeting on the 16th in Alex?
And we have to make a decision as to whether it's Alex or Fergus.
Yeah. So the decision I heard was the business meeting in Alex, because Wayne will be able to attend that. We'll lodge up at the Prairie Wetland Learning Center that night in Fergus, and then we'll have our field tour on the 17th up in Fergus.
So the public meeting will be at the Prairie Learning Center on the night of the 16th.
No, I think if you're going to have a business meeting, you have it in Alex.
Yeah, both meetings in Alex on the 16th.
Yeah, and you said 3 hours for public from 9, from 5 to 8. I mean, how do you envision that's a lot of time for public input? And I don't know how many people would be there, but if we had anything like this, I think this, you know, that could take 30 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of our business meeting, we have a period of public comment, and we'll just adjust accordingly. I mean, I suspect it won't be more than maybe a half hour, 45 minutes worth. And people can get dinner, and we can travel up to Fergus, have the night there, and then have our field trip the next day.
Is there a consensus on that?
Anyone opposed to that?
Mr. Chair, the fact that I live 50 miles from here, do I have to come and bump with the group, or can I stay in my own house?
I think you can stay in your own house.
Okay, thanks.
Is 2 hours enough time for our business meeting?
Under the schedule that's just been laid out, it'll be longer.
Be 2 till maybe 5, I would guess.
Yes, please.
That's on April, 2 to 5, 2 to 6.
I'm just concerned. We could leave here at 7 in the morning and actually spend most of the day doing stuff and have a one-day meeting. Hell of a lot easier than taking 2 days. It seems like we're leaving early, leaving late, and coming back early. Why don't we consolidate this into one really long day?
I live 155 miles from here. Did that help you a little bit? You don't care.
No.
And I think, Dave, that given the presentations and the field tour and the business meeting, I think it would be hard to get a cram in one day. And travel. I think that would be tough. Okay. So I think we've taken care of that one. Bill, do you want to just walk us through a bit and any council member input? Because, again, this will be something we'll forward as a schedule to the council. What about in July?
In July, we're looking at Grand Rapids. The proposal was the same sort of business meeting in the afternoon, public input meeting in the evening. That, I assume, has been changed now. And then the next day, we'll be looking at a presentation on young forest wildlife needs and management. And I think that's young forests are young, not the wildlife. This is a joint presentation of some of the counties up there and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And it is an explanation of how to manage forest, young forests, manage forests to a young state and the benefits for wildlife, both game and non-game, some observing of actual on-the-ground application of what we will have learned at the Deep Portage Learning Center. Then out in August, a one-day meeting in Rochester, and do that in the morning, and then in the afternoon, some cold water fisheries and goat prairies, perhaps. And then 15th and 16th of September, a business meeting, and hopefully at that time we'll be able to look at some of the results of our planning efforts and have a public input meeting, the same structure that we're using in Alexandria, and then take a look at some metro habitat opportunities, specifically the Vermilion River and its associated area, and any other metro wildlife management area issues, such as encroachment, those kinds of things.
So let me ask, can we get the young forest wildlife needs and management done with a presentation here instead of going all the way to Grand Rapids?
We certainly could. We would not be able to actually observe the treatments in the field. But we can bring, it is a portable presentation.
I guess the only thing just to be aware of, members, is that the Deep Portage Learning Center is probably an hour and a half to Grand Rapids. It's not in Grand Rapids. It's over near Hackensack. And it's not a straight shot. It's not going down 35W or up Highway 2, it's back roads, county roads to get there. So one thing we might want to consider, Bill, is having them see if they can't have that in Grand Rapids, because that's a lot of travel in 2 days. They have a meeting, then again travel for another hour and a half one way just to get to the ELC there.
Okay. Well, my question is, can we do the whole thing in Minneapolis instead of traveling to Grand Rapids?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we can do some of the, we can do the business meeting there. I think that, again, a lot of people have contacted myself and I suspect other council members about the presence of the council in outstate Minnesota. And I just want to make sure that we honor that commitment that I've made that we would make a presence of there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I won't be here on the 15th. July, I can't.
You'll be able to make the 14th, but not the 15th. I'll drive home, and I probably will do the same thing the 16th, the 17th, just not be able to attend.
Okay.
Just too much time.
Rick? I think any July meeting has to come after an answer on whether we have money.
Sure.
And that I would, I mean, if we don't have the authorization or cash advance, then I think we should not schedule that meeting, and we should schedule it in August.
We'll hopefully have a meeting in the next week or so.
Yeah, but I would just caution the members that, you know, we've received a letter from the finance commissioner. It was a $2.7 billion shortfall. And that will have consequences. I know that people believe very strongly and are very passionate about the things that we discuss in this room, but there's a whole other world that's going to be going on relating to budget cuts and impacts, and it's going to be an equity and the fairness question that's going to come into the LCC as well. So I would hesitate to schedule anything in July. We'll wait until we have some clarity.
Jim, maybe Bob will have a better handle next week. Hopefully, yeah. Maybe not on the whole equation. That, you know, I don't know when the governor's planning to make his decisions on how long or not, but hopefully we'll know more. I think we're seeing Hanson's right. We just simply might have
We don't have a staff.
We don't have.
We don't
have.
Anything else, Bill, on the schedule?
The one thing that needs to be done is we do need to make sure that we have a quorum at the business meeting on the 16th, because we'll be going through accomplishment plans. That's the most important item on this particular agenda, and they have to be approved before they can start spending the money.
Do you know, Bill, where the LCCMR is meeting in July? Are they meeting in Grand Rapids at that same time?
I do not know.
I mean, if they are, it would be nice to be able to at least get an evening session together and, you know, structured, and maybe try and address a couple issues.
But I really think, given the budget discussion and things like that, at this point, what we can commit to is the June meeting.
Absolutely.
And not send anything out on anything else at this point.
So I guess we haven't taken a formal motion on this, but is there a motion to adopt, with the things that we've talked about today, this schedule for of meetings to the full council for its consideration next week?
So moved.
We need to have a movement by the executive committee.
I would.
Okay. Any discussion? Further discussion?
I would only do the June meeting. I would only set that schedule on the June meeting, because I don't think we can.
Well, let me respond to that, Rick. I think we can set the meetings and cancel the meetings, as opposed to not schedule a meeting. I think it's a lot harder to try and schedule something, as evidence here, trying to change a meeting date than to set something and have to cancel. I mean, we did that in April, right, or May, when we couldn't meet because you guys were in session. So, any further discussion? We have a motion then to recommend this schedule to the full council. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No.
Okay, motion adopted. So, we are now to the last agenda item, which is public comment. Rick?
I'm wondering if we've had any formal notification to the project proposal. I mean, we assume that people have read the newspapers and have seen the statute passed, but each of those project proposers, a letter just going out that their project was, just looking, we're dealing with millions of dollars here. I think it would be an appropriate notification that your project has been signed into law, and then we'll be in contact. Just some formality that would occur.
I will do that. I will do that. We also have to send the letter once the accomplishment plan is approved, but I think it's worthwhile, so you make it.
Wow, I just noticed we got this document. Is there anything we're going to talk about on this, or not? I know it's on our agenda.
The document is
successful conservation grant programs.
I don't have this. Where did this come from?
Oh, why don't we take that during the public comment period? Because this came from.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay, Bob? We'll take
it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought this was the small grants program.
No, I don't know where it came from. But all right, let's move on to the public comment period. So, Bill, do you have any names?
Well, I had hoped we would hear from Ms. Coleman and Mr. Hobbs earlier on, but maybe they have comments to their point.
Please. Thanks for being patient and welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, thanks for having us back. We were just, thank you, I guess, for inviting us to comment a little bit on your, on what you put forth and what Bill put together. And I think certainly from our perspective, it's a good process that you're embarking on. Just to explain a little bit, that the map that we handed out, that's the color map that you see, all that is taking what we have in the 50-year vision, the 14 different regions, and rolling that up into six regions, something similar to what Bill put in his proposal. We just offer that there's another way to cut it that has regions that might be more recognizable from a cultural standpoint when you go out to work with folks and thinking about regions from an organizational perspective. And the numbers that you see there on the map, those are the numbers that came from the Duck Plan, the Pheasant Plan, the AMA, all those things. And again, just to clarify, with the 50-year vision, all we did was to roll up all those plans. We didn't edit them in any way. So those numbers are just what comes from each of those plans. Certainly things like the Pheasant Plan, the Duck Plan, there's overlap, and we recognize that. But we never presumed to try to tease that back out, imagining at some point that's exactly what people on the ground who were that are qualified as projects come in to be able to figure out, okay, what should be the real conservation targets in terms of which wetlands, which uplands, which grasslands. So that's all that is to illustrate how you could use the 50-year vision to be able to generate hard target numbers. You know, Bill, you mentioned there's some of the soft stuff that's in the 50-year vision. A lot of that came really from when we went out to all these different groups around the state and talked about, hey, here's what the Duck Plan says, here's what the Pheasant Plan says. You know, what do you think should be added in terms of different conservation goals or objectives? So that's when you read that 50-year vision, you see all that other stuff that's in there. A lot of that came from those meetings. We didn't, as the Campaign for Conservation, we didn't add anything ourselves. It was purely from input from the plans or when we went out and had these meetings in each of the 14 regions. So that's how that information came together. And again, certainly I'm willing to help in any way we can to make that information useful to you. And that's where we talked to you before. That's kind of the idea of trying to get the statewide plan and the 50-year region to work together to help you in any way that we can.
And if I could, yeah, please, thank you. Jean. I'm Jean Coleman again, and we did not mean to add in any confusion to the conversation earlier by handing this map out. It was just to illustrate our comments, so I apologize for that. But if you look on both sides, really what we're talking about and suggesting is that our two efforts, the 50-year vision and the statewide conservation and preservation plan, can help the discussion about using those priorities and existing plans related to what's on the ground. The statewide conservation plan has a lot of data layers that relate to, for example, the AMA plan, the shallow wetlands, etc. And so what we're hoping we're able to do is to bring those two sides of that sheet together in configuration that you decide on in regards to sections or planning sections. So that you can tell there's a total number of wetland acres, there's a total number of restorable wetlands, shallow lakes, high-quality habitat, connected forest land that relate to the plan goals in each of those subsections. So that's why we brought this today, and hopefully it'll get you a little bit visually oriented to what we're suggesting. The second thing that I would like to suggest from the statewide plans perspective is I would love to get into your hands the detail on the recommendations that are going to be included in the process paper, because those habitat actions with the taglines on page 3 of your document, those are really the taglines, and there's a lot of substance under that, and we can distill that, and hopefully that will inform the conversation. later, and it's an additional plan that integrates many of these other plans. I think that's it.
Great, thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, sure. Either, do you have any suggestions for us? I know, Steve, you kind of said, well, the plan that Bill put together looked great and all that kind of stuff. Any specific things you'd suggest that we keep in mind? You know, we've had a lot of discussion about the professional, you know, folks engaging. And, you know, any thoughts?
Mr. Chair,
Steve?
That actually gets to kind of what this document was about. I mean, just not to be presumptuous in any way, but part of what we did through the 50-year vision was also to look at programs around the country and how they organize themselves and how they develop that process. And so what this is just a summary that I put together that I hope would be useful for you folks, that say here's out there kind of the best of various programs in terms of the process they use. You know, a lot of these programs have been around for 20, 30 years. The process they've used, what they've learned from that, and what we can learn from that as you put together your own process. So I think you're on the right track in terms of putting all those pieces together. I would just offer that there's certainly other things that we can bring in from other programs around the country that might help you develop, I mean, right down to the application process and all those things that you're wrestling with.
So,
right,
so just keep in mind that the responsibility for developing this program rests with the Department of Natural Resources, so suggest you get a copy to Dave Schaaf in the department.
Any other comments? Darby?
Not on this, but so I'll hold it over there.
Thanks.
Darby? Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask the question. I meant to do it before we were finishing the travel. I presume that we're going to pay expenses for non-partisan staff who would be accompanying us?
Yeah, great question.
I assume that that's what we would do.
That's my intent, Bill. Can you clarify?
Well, that's the policy of other councils and commissions, and it, as far as I'm concerned, allows us to communicate better with the legislature and form a stronger foundation for our recommendations. The cost is marginally not that great, since we'll be trying to provide transportation from the Twin Cities and those other things. So I would highly recommend that we do that.
And as chair, I would authorize that. I mean, if I had power, I would authorize that the nonpartisan staff are allowed to participate, and we would cover their expenses.
Absolutely. They're going to be critically important to us. Probably more important than far than we are. So.
Great. So I will pay travel expenses of nonpartisan staff. And have a way of knowing who's going to be on the list.
Any other comments? The council. Yeah, Len. Welcome. Thanks for your patience.
I have more patience than I have anything else.
Just again, this is old hat for you, but if you just want to introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you. I'm Len Price, a citizen, but also wishing to speak to you today as the executive director of the Minnesota Conservation Corps. And I want to thank you for the hard work that you have done throughout these past months to put together a package. I know how difficult it is. I served for 10 years on the LCCMR as a legislator, and I know how difficult it was to coalesce goals, objectives, big plans, small plans, politics, regional, geographic issues. It's just a real challenge to do that. I enjoyed my sojourn there very, very much. I had a chance to work with some of the folks at this table in that capacity, but I just want to say thank you. And I want to share also that in the final document that came out of the conference committee, the Conservation Corps was named as a entity with which project proposers should come and suggest that maybe the MCC could do a collaborative with those particular entities. And we have already had a couple of folks call us to talk about that. We're very pleased that that's occurred, and we'll do our best to uphold your trust and confidence in us. So if you are traveling about during the summer and been listening to your plans, if there's some way that we can connect with an MCC crew or show you a project that an MCC crew did, we'd be happy to facilitate that. Wanted to offer that to you today.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for your hard work.
Oh, thanks for the kind words. Ron?
Thank you much. My name is Ron Harnack. I do two things. I'm a private consultant in water resources management, but I also do some work for the Red River Watershed Management Board. And a couple comments I'd like to ask consideration for is, even though you haven't really used this map a whole lot, you know, in it, I would ask continued consideration at least to the aggregated sixth ecoregion approach. I think there are some very unique aspects to those six regions that I think offer some ultimately some practical splits when you get into to specific priorities and you're looking at your decisions down the line. And I think it also provides a better balance of fins as well as feathers. I look at some of the priorities and discussion, and I think there's appears to be a stronger focus for feathers than there is for fins. And statewide, we have a real dramatic and significant need, and there's some great opportunities for restoration of some major rivers in the state and restoring some significant fisheries to them. Second, in furtherance of that, when you do your southeast one on cold water fisheries, maybe consideration of having DNR come in and talk about their fisheries issues statewide. So there's kind of a warm water and cold water and perspective to it. And I think that aids in the longer term discussions. And then last thing, we talked about how some of these acreage numbers get integrated. I participated in DNR's Working Lands Initiative quite a bit in its early stages, and not so much in the last few. But one of the real issues that was involved in that is how do we deal with, okay, we got so many acres we want for ducks, so many for pheasants, so many for so on and so forth. And I think they've done a very, very nice job of trying to pull those numbers together into one integrated approach that meets the overall objectives that's here. And Mark Matuska, I think, is the individual within DNR. If you haven't heard from him and how they've gone through that, I think there could be some value in listening to how they have done that with the Working Lands Initiative. So those are just some observations. And again, you know, I think you guys have done a hell of a job. Over the last year, you had some real challenges with it. But, you know, everybody I hear is, everybody can't be on first at the same time. We've got a 25-year strategy here. And ultimately, the priorities of the state will, everybody will get their turn in time.
Thanks, Ron. Yes. Just introduce yourself.
Yes. I'm Paul Austin with Conservation Minnesota. And I just wanted to also offer assistance. We're very interested in your public process, which we think is great and important. And you had a very open and public process thus far. As you're doing meetings around the state, we hope to also assist by working with other conservation organizations to get the word out of when those are happening, where they're happening, so that then you have full participation and full public buy-in in the plan you come out with. I'd also just, from a communications perspective, echo that sort of six-region piece. We're going to be communicating about this work for the next 25 years. It seems to me that having a framework for that communication where people can self-identify where they're from and the plan that's for southeastern Minnesota or the plan that's for southwestern Minnesota makes sense to them about their community when they might not think of themselves in terms of which ecoregion they live in. So that's just kind of one piece of feedback.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, well, at the end of the meeting, motion to adjourn. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Folks, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
We'll go from there.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We were just talking with a gentleman who lives at
Well, I tell you what, boy, that's been probably the hottest topic in the land of resource in the county for years.
Are
you going to stay with me or what?
I don't talk very well. I can't sleep with other people. Unless you're damn good looking. And then you don't qualify. He's terrible. Yeah, you won't go wrong with Rush. He's a good guy. But holy buckets, they haven't been keeping director there for years. They've had more director there than they've had county commissioners. Well, you know, envision yourself buying a $300,000 lakeshore lot and then having some bureaucrat come out and tell you what you can do and what you can't do. So then your commissioners get involved, and who wants to work for people like that? And I worked with those commissioners for 16 years, and I was elected.
We have no problem,
so that made me different. They had to live with me. They don't have to live with the final official.
Instead of hunting
are there egg issues? Is it just the shore?
Oh, there's egg issues. Yeah.
Some of my
little bit. Like we've done in Colorado.
Yeah. Went to five townships. $53 million. I mean, now we've got people. Now they come out of the woodwork. Now the public comes out and says, we can't afford this. There's no public dollars available. $2 million under the stimulus plan. Well, that's nothing.
Not until.
So we were talking horrendous amounts of money for the big pipe deal.
Having the task force meet every month and struggle with this is not
reaching
their land, but we're constituents. And, you know, we got to go to the shoreline. Lake Association.
Lake Associations are very, very active now. I mean, they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And again, there you have that group of professionals coming out a lot of time.
And I think, if I were to go out there again, I would probably pay the extra.
And so the county board was involved in that decision, the final decision?
No. So it was just fun kind of sitting out.
They were hiding in the back.
At one of these.
The other way to resolve it was
sloppy coins. We had one within about 15 yards. I was wondering what the hell is this? Public Works guy can go back to the building and you can use the new building to teach the county board is barely represented on the task force. And that's a concern that we do. I've been through this a number of times.
You have a choice?
At this point, I do. And my bid was twice as much as what they want to pay because I said, you got to involve the public. And they may not ask me to go any further. And it's always a nest. I just like to know what it is before I jump in. So I'll send you the task force members, and if you have any other insights.
You turned yours in.
I didn't have one.
I'm a taxpayer.
I think I got some skills. Good talking to you.
Thank you.
Last
time we did last year, was
that's what it was.
All the TV stations showed up.
2 o'clock.
Unfortunately,
the feed. You know, we sort of changed our dynamics of the
But it really is.
They can blame me for the first decision.
Why did you drive 3 hours?
What do you mean I'm not a member of the executive committee?
You're not a member. You have to be a member. Thundering her across
the street. So that's why I said, I'll take you all.
We got two places out by us.
Oh, and you know where?
Hyphen's got there.
Right.
And there's another place.
And Kowalski sells their meat.
Oh, do they?
So they're part of, help they sponsor us, and then we can do it for everybody.
Well, it started. I don't buy the patties. I buy the ground.
Right.
You know, and you make your own.
Right. So what I do is I go to the
We got a really good one.
Oh, okay.
I know that you're a same as you have
to be here. You can't beat them.
No. Take it easy.
Yep.
None of them are doing it.
I'm just asking you one side. You were wondering the very same
thing. And you've been through this.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult.
It's like talcum powder out there. We're putting in some new fence to shore up what we already have.
Thanks for bringing up all the good stuff.
Doesn't stop.
Some of the outstate guys. I'm glad somebody's going to go up there and look there because they want to make sure.
Not ready. It's not until June 30th, anyway.
We're about to.
I just wish we had more weeks of notice.
Can you, Jerry, spend
money while you're there. Put that on the bottom of your email.
So, is it staying at this Prairie Wetlands?
Very nice.
Is it?
Well, that's that'll probably be. Have you seen Rick Brown's stuff before?
I've seen his presentation. That's why I told Bill we had to get him.
That's why I'm going to drive, if that's okay.
Kind of smooth.
You have the power. I've got the power to go ahead and do that. Raise your right hand. We'll give him the power.
You know what? You're not going to have all the plants. There's only some of those plants. Are germane, but the other one really is that working lens.
And that's what you really go to.
You're welcome. That one come in. And the other one is more about appreciating the results. Now, we're looking at paper.
Obviously.
He's got it in the bag.
Whatever we can do.
But he's putting together the small grants now. What it was he read the title of the grant. I thought that's what you were talking about. As opposed to the grant making process.
Well, yeah, they wanted to change. They wanted
don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. I guess the first thing you do is to get the request out of who wants
We'll be able to get individual rooms. I think you need to clarify whether they can get their own individual rooms. My guess is you can, since we'll have a place
still working. Yeah.
So what does it report? Yeah,
everything.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. And however we can be helpful. And it's whatever we can use from the.
I think
Sure it is.
What does it recognize that in order to be clearly sensitive?